Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, the calendar says it's Friday. It's Tuesday to me, so I'm sorry. God only knows where this may go this evening. My schedule is just, I don't know if it's got to do with circadian rhythms or biorhythms or maybe it's got something to do with, my recent schedule. But you're here, and I'm here, and I'm tickled pink about both facts. The boss is off on a road trip with the kids, going over to visit the oldest young'un and the grandbabies, so I am a bachelor this evening. Necessarily, of course, that means that the pre-show conversation in the Head On Radio Network chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, free and easy to join, is naturally food porn when the show will be ending, and I will, of course, be having some broth or something. Thanks, guys. But then again, it's not like we haven't done this to each other before. It is Friday on the front porch, despite whatever my brain may tell me. It's Friday on the front porch, the end of the week, and a chance to sort of freeform around at looking at any number of stories of the wild, the wacky, the weird, and, you know, generally the right wing and the pig licking. Oh, no, Kath, more food porn. It makes it interesting here. You know, when I make my bouillon after the show, I can pretend that it has the delightful aroma of eggplant parmesan. That was the recipe under discussion prior to the show beginning, and Lottie has a magnificent one, I might add. Now, scheduling reminder, I hit the road again on the 16th. What day is the 16th? Yeah, the 16th is a Wednesday, so we will have Monday and Tuesday shows. And then the 16th, the 17th, the 18th, the 19th, the 20th, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and 25th, I'm gone. I'm sorry. John Fox, you out there? I know it's early Saturday morning, but maybe you crawled out early to go feed the chooks or something. A lot of opportunities in there if you're not driving yourself crazy, running around being a real live working entertainer and stuff. For guest hosting opportunities, if you'd like to take a run at it. What'll basically happen is I'll be on my way back from Wisconsin on the 20th, and it looks like it's not completely firmed up, but I'll probably get as far as Atlanta and then board a plane for Paris. And after Paris, I'll board a plane or a train or something for Frankfurt, Germany. And after that, I will come home, and maybe things will get a little bit normal for a little while, to the extent that normal is only a setting on a dryer. So the purpose of that is to go over and talk to a few other major banking investors in the poisoning of my friends, my neighbors, and my colleagues. Because there are major banking investors in Europe who pay to see Appalachia reduced to a barren, lifeless hellscape, and there will be a couple of board meetings, shareholder meetings to address in Paris, and then one in Frankfurt. After which, I get to come home for a little bit. Horzak. HZ in the chat room. Rumor has it I may very well be getting to, but you know what? cab rides and so forth notwithstanding, going to Europe might as well be going to Peoria. Boardrooms all look like boardrooms. I wish I had a little time to wander around, but I want to get back here and get back to work. You know, this work. Right now my life is sort of split between the advocacy work and this work. Because there's a real sense that we are at a crossroads. I was talking to my friend and my colleague, Bo Webb, earlier today. And he said, damned if I didn't get up this morning and see that they've got two new permits applied for, one of them right over top of his head, over top of his house, and another one on the other side of the mountain. And it's got to be stopped before they poison and kill everybody. And yeah, a little update, because I know there have been a couple of questions. I told you I was off to the surgeon's office this morning. And I was, and we had a nice long talk about my seemingly normal gallbladder. And he said, listen, it is not unusual to see a normal functioning gallbladder and have it still making you sick. So I guess mine is sort of spastic or effed up. So it's going to come out anyway, and I guess we're scheduling now. Maybe shooting for, mid-July or something. That's about the first opening there is. I'm going to go to Paris and eat bland food, and go to Frankfurt and eat bland food, and drink mineral water. You know, going to Paris and not drinking the wine, and going to Germany and not drinking the beer. Yeah, who but me? Oy. Yeah, thanks, Amelia. I have the Dick Luger of gallbladders. Yeah, that's good, HC. But it is. It's Friday on the front porch, and there's weirdness and seriousness and creepiness and hatefulness and bizarreness, and every last little bit of it is available to us this evening. I will remind you now in the beginning of the program. Yes, I know that, Marty. Frankfurt, Germany, you're going to the wrong part of the country at the wrong time for Oktoberfest. The beer's good in Frankfurt, too. Although, yes, Oktoberfest is my grown-up idea of Disneyland. A gentle reminder at the beginning of the program that this, all of this is a function of, it happens as a function of your kind determination to see it continue. There is a PayPal button available at headonradionetwork.com. That's how we keep the lights on here. That's how everything gets paid for that allows me to get back here and do this every evening instead of standing in the middle of what used to be a Civil War battlefield saying, welcome to Walmart! You need a buggy? Welcome to Walmart! Scooters are over there. Welcome to Walmart! Because my cheap coal electricity has proven to be none so cheap for the last several years. The electric bill around here runs about $375 a month. And that's on top of the internet bill and the phone bill and this bill and that bill and keeping up with the equipment Joneses, and you get the idea. And just so you can note, the widget is fully functioning. There was some question of that earlier. No, the widget on the main page of the Horn is fully functioning. And if you look, you will see that here on the 11th day of May 2012, we are at about $685 out of the $2,500 that we try to reach every month. And, you know, we still have that standing offer, the Beat the Swede offer, in which our buddy Scott in Sweden will match he will kick an extra $100 into the kitty any month that we actually meet the fundraising goal. That offer's been outstanding for a couple of months yet, and he hasn't been compelled to follow through because we haven't met the fundraising goal for a couple of months. We are at presently $685. The midway point of May is about 4 to 5 days away, 4.5 days away, which means that we need to get about $735 between now and Monday-ish, Tuesday-ish. Yeah, Tuesday-ish. I don't know if that'll happen or not, but that's where we stand. Any help you can give is always, always appreciated. And many, many thanks for the couple of contributions that came in yesterday and the three contributions to the Thrifty 250 that came in today. So that's the housekeeping, I think. I hope. If I missed anything, let me know. Hearing no objections, we will proceed. But how? How to proceed? Well, I'll tell you what. I want to share a couple of emails with you that have rolled in over the last couple of days. This one came in while I was still on the road. It came in from our buddy Mike. We've got a lot of Mikes, a lot of Davids. This is one of the fraternity of Mikes. Hello again, Bob. I truly hope that all is fine and well with you and yours. Unfortunately, Texas still smells of Republicans. Yeah, and it doesn't smell like victory, does it? I just want to say, if we Democrats, progressives, and liberals, however you categorize yourself with labels, we need to get tougher, unite stronger, and beat these Tea Party Nazis back where they came from. With the recent ousting of Dick Lugar, the last and only conservative friend to say the Democrats had, the Tea Party is doing what they do best. Piece by piece, politician by politician, state by state, they are replacing the old GOP and inserting their new and improved GOP, and will soon have reign with local government officials in every single state in the Union. They will soon have representation in both houses of Congress to a majority, and they will eventually have control of the executive office, and then the downfall of what was once a great nation will turn into a Reich, and the rest of us will either conform to this Reich or we will... I don't even want to say it, let alone think it. This country, says Mike, is in a sad state of affairs. I don't see much enthusiasm within the Democratic Party. We Dems talk a great talk, but when it comes to action, we are way too passive and have to realize that this is a war not only for us but for our kids and our kids and their kids' futures. Most of our representatives in both houses are weak and don't want to fight. Ask yourself this: do I really want a Reich running this country, a Tea Party Reich? So far, from what I view, it looks like we do, because we're always turning a blind eye to what is happening all around us. Where are all the fighters? Why haven't the gloves come off yet? I just hope come this November that Democrats, progressives, and liberals speak with their votes at the booths throughout this country. I hope we send a crystal clear message to this new GOP, this Reich that wants to crush humanity as we had known it, that there is no way in hell we will allow this nation to become infiltrated with evil. If we don't, then it is all over, and we have no one else to blame but ourselves. In the meantime, every goddamn Democrat, progressive, and liberal should be scared as hell. They should be shaking in their boots at the thought of what this country will go through if we keep allowing these filthy, heartless sons of bitches to get a foothold on our sovereignty. I know I am, because I see it coming. We all should know now that there is no more GOP as we once knew it before the Reagan era. There is no more bipartisanship between the two parties in any government in this country, whether federal, state, or local. It is either going to be the Tea Party Nazis or what is left of the Democratic Party that run this country. We either keep this country afloat or we let them drive it into the ground, drill, baby, drill, until there is no more, and walk away with our tails between our legs and shrug our shoulders and say, oh, well, sad, isn't it? That's how I see our side in this political fighting for life war. He continues, Bob, thanks for lending us your voice and the medium to allow ours to also be heard. You and the White Rose Society are absolutely the best. Your staff are absolutely some of the finest individuals that I can imagine. And I can echo that and magnify and, yeah, absolutely. You have a well-oiled machine there, Bob. Yeah, I'm not sure about how well-oiled it is, Mike. It's got a little rust around the edges, some creaky things and squeaky things, but thank you. Keep fighting the good fight, and one of these days, mountaintop removal will be a thing of the past. But we need to get rid of these filthy, repig-licking Nazis. If not, there aren't going to be any mountains anywhere in this country. Oh, by the way, I would like to point out that I have 4 gas drilling rigs within a quarter to a half mile from my home. And probably some fracking going on around here also. This is the first year that my lawn is completely dead, and we've had plenty of rain. Also, my trees that have stood on this property the past 12-plus years are showing signs of distress and are dying. When there weren't any drilling rigs, all was fine and well. I've also noticed our water, which isn't well water, by the way, stinks to hog heaven, which it also never has done prior to these rigs invading every square yard of land. Makes me wonder. Makes me really, really wonder how contaminated the ground beneath my feet might actually be. It sickens me to see what was once a beautiful star-filled night sky and peaceful evening is now cluttered with the raucous sounds of drilling rigs, heavy machinery, and lights that make my backyard look like a small town. The noise, regardless of the barriers, is sometimes unbearable, but the repiglickens love to drill it, kill it, and move on to the next source, or I might editorialize, next victim. Thanks for your time, Bob, and that of your staff. Have a fantastic day to all. Well, we're all in this together. It's not so much a staff as an entire determined volunteer effort. But thank you in return, Mike. Mike, in Soon I Shall Be Free at Last and Not Bound by the Chains of Tyranny, Texas. There's a bunch in that note. There's a whole bunch to contemplate. Mike's references to the laydown of my Democrats is hard to ignore. A fascinating little bit of this or that. I don't know if you saw this or not, but you may remember back when the new Senate took power in January 2011. There were those who were talking about the necessity to change the rules to prevent repiglickens who had proven themselves unworthy of rules like filibuster, as we understand it. There was a determined effort put forth by folks like Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon and Senator Tom Udall to change the filibuster rules to prevent a determined, obstructive, obstruction for obstruction's sake minority from grinding the business of the Senate to a halt. Well, here it is. It's the 11th day of May. Yesterday was the 10th. And on the 10th day of May, 2012, that hard-charging leader, Harry Reid, came galloping to the forefront to announce that, he was wrong. And the people who wanted to change the filibuster rules were right.
Try to be reasonable. So, as we do that, Mr. President, we're going to vote on this. I'm going to file cloture in just a second here, which I hate to do. Another motion to proceed. Well, if there were ever a time when Tom Udall and Jeff Merkley were prophetic, it's tonight. These two young, fine senators said that it was time we changed the rules in the Senate. We didn't. They were right. The rest of us were wrong. Or most of us now, anyway. What a shame. So, here we are, wasting time because of the Republicans. This week, we've accomplished a lot, Mr. President. We had a vote on a judge, and we voted on cloture, on the Republicans defeating our ability to get something done with student loans. That's our workload this week. I know it's been tough, but Mr. President, that was sarcastic, of course, but this is just absolutely mindless what's going on. And then to top it off, one of the finest members of the Senate we've had ever was defeated yesterday by a man, listen to this, Mr. President, who campaigned on the platform that there's too much compromise in the Senate. And he's going to come back here and not compromise with anybody on anything. Now, that's what we need in the Senate. More people who are willing to do nothing but fight. So, Mr. President, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to take the steps to keep this moving forward. Hope we can do it next week. I hope we can do it without a lot of trouble, which we already have too much. So I have a cloture motion at the desk, Mr. President.
What do you make of that? Harry Reid sounds genuinely sad, aggrieved. It seems as though here on the tenth day of May 2012, it had finally just dawned on him that the other side are a bunch of goddamn thugs. When you and I, we've known it all along. Was there ever? I mean, how long ago? Did Senator Jim Demented of South Carolina say that his only goal was to create a Waterloo for President Obama by obstructing the Senate? How long ago was it that the Senate Minority Leader, Chinless Mitch McConnell, said that the Republican minority's only goal in the Senate was to bring about the defeat of Barack Obama? Bless his genial little heart, was Harry Reid not listening? Bless his credulous soul, did he think they were kidding? Because I'm pretty sure that I didn't, and I'm pretty sure that you didn't either. But he's right. Richard Lugar will likely be succeeded by a teabagging horse's rear end who does think there's too much compromise in the Senate when there has been no compromise whatsoever. It was a sad thing hearing Senator Reid's remarks. It made me wonder if he's operating in the same universe as you and I are. When you get to the Senate, do you get, I don't know, so bubbled up in all that tradition that you think that nobody, that revolutionaries couldn't actually come in there and just start trying to tear the place into a million pieces? Because that's what these teabaggers have done. That's what these right-wing zealots, these ideologues, these religious fanatics have done. And Harry Reid just noticed. What do you do in a situation like that? What was he thinking when he thought that the Senate could continue in the same old way dealing with these sharp-fanged, viperous, serpentine monsters like Demented and Saxta Chambliss and pick a freak, any freak. What did he think they were going to do? That they'd make a little noise and then they'd come around and say that, well, yeah, okay, good government's really our goal, and we understand that the heart and soul of the Senate is compromise. So let us reason together. bullshit. That's not how teabaggers and generally repiglickens operate. It was a long, long, long time ago that I coined the phrase the stump licker bunch. Telling the story of how frontiersmen would make their hooch out in the woods, and that what was left over would be the leavings, and with all the nastiness in it, would be left in a hollowed out stump. And that after a few days it would ferment and it would get vile and hateful, yellow jackets crawling all over it, little sticks and stones and chunks of old stump and ants and whatever. But that along would come the boys who figured it was just fine to drink that stump liquor because it'd get them where they wanted to go. And when the stump liquor bunch got a belly full, they didn't give a damn who you were. They was liquored up right and ready to ruckus. Stump liquor will make you mean, crazy, and blind. And that's what we've got in these teabagging, reactionary, ideologue, theocratic zealots. And they've been walking up to these staid, somber members of the United States Senate and punching them in the face and waiting to see if they'd swing back. And when they didn't, they punched them again. And after a while, they get them on the ground and they start stomping and kicking a little bit. What's that phrase that right-wing theocratic zealot in Tennessee used? Stomp a mud hole in them. And very few people on our side have figured out that the way you deal with the stump liquor bunch is you punch them back. Better yet, when you see them coming, you punch them before they get the chance to take a swing. You fight. You don't make speeches in patient but somewhat frustrated tones about the rights and prerogatives and history and tradition of the Senate. You stand in the doorway and you stomp their feet, and while they're looking down, you knock their teeth upward. But instead, the stump liquor bunch got a belly full and got the bit in their teeth, and this is the bitter harvest that we are gathering in. Jim noting, history is repeating another cycle. Slowly but surely, the legislative, judicial, and the executive branches bow to the forces of reaction and retrograde motion. Subject line of his email, the Reichstag remembered. And in my face be all my sins remembered. It's grim when you see the light go on, but even then, you don't even see the glimmer of anger. Of righteous anger. Not all anger is wrong. Sometimes it's okay. Because sometimes it communicates with people who can only be communicated with in such fashion. Jesus. Now, like I said, we've got a lot of stuff to go into this evening. Toward the end of the program last night, Fritz sent me a story from the Huffington Post with a poster, a banner from an internet, I shouldn't say poster, it's a banner from an internet ad. On the left, which is kind of weird, is Ron Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. On the right of the banner is a frightfully angry black man looking Barack Obama pointing his finger at something. with his mouth open. Going from left to right, from Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist's forehead, toward the head of the President of the United States, is a rifle. This Rand Paul ad has a rifle pointed directly at the head of the President of the United States. Had something like that been promulgated during the Bush years, the promulgator would have been waterboarded almost immediately, probably personally by Richard B. Dick, big-time Dick Cheney before he dicks you. Underneath this eliminationist banner, well, on the banner itself, "Stop Obama's gun ban! Sign the Firearms Freedom Survey," a message from U.S. Senator Rand Paul. Aqua Buddhist. No, that part's not there. You know, Rand would have been a lot better off if he just kept smoking dope. Dear fellow American, if we're going to reverse President Obama's million rifle ban, gun owners have to turn the heat up on Congress now before it's too late. Please sign your Firearms Freedom Survey and put yourself squarely on the record against President Obama's million rifle ban. The message comes from an organization called the National Association for Gun Rights. These guys make the NRA, the National Republican Rifle Association, look like a bunch of liberals. What, you might ask, because you've probably not heard of it. God knows I hadn't. The gun stores around here seem to be doing a land office business. What, then, is the million rifle ban? Because we need them million rifles when we have to defend our freedom against the government, which is going to come at us with tanks and planes and guns and bombs and machine guns and gas. But we're going to stop them like them minute men marching on Lexington and Concord, New Hampshire. And we're going to do it with our million rifles. That Kenyan anti-colonialist Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people, Obama, is going to put on us freedom-loving people. What is the million rifle ban? Is it a new plan that maybe we progressives, liberals, whatever we call ourselves, are not talking about so as to make sure that the gun-loving right is caught unawares when the dark-uniformed the stormtroopers come into their homes and search for them and just as a test case, seize and ban a million rifles in America, putting a stake through the heart of our beloved Second Amendment. Is that what it is? No. No, sorry. I have firearms. Yes, I know there are issues. I probably shouldn't have them. But I got them. A couple here, there. One for hunting birds, and another for hunting varmints. And a pistol. A couple other things. No. The million rifle ban is a decision recently made by the Obama administration to block the importation of hundreds of thousands of rifles from the Korean War era. You got that? The Korean War era. All gummy and gooey with cosmoline, probably. There are concerns about the high-capacity magazines the rifles have, as well as the firepower. The rifle at the heart of the controversy is the M1 Garand. It's a million rifle ban of Korean War era firearms. Okay. Huh. So that means that we're not shutting down the Browning or the Ruger or the Remington Savage. We've just decided maybe not to import a bunch of dodgy old firearms from 60 years ago. Jeebus. Oh, but they've made it all better on the website now. Since there was a howl of protest, you know, for the, what's their name? The National Association for Gun Rights, NAGGR. No, really, that's what it is, NAGGR, N-A-G-R, NAGGR. Since there was an outcry of protest of pointing a rifle at the president's head, well, instead of taking down the banner, you hate to waste perfectly good artwork, so they just swapped the M1 around so that the muzzle, you know, the business end of the rifle is now pointing at Rand Paul's head, which goes to show that Rand Paul is a much braver and fearless American than that Kenyan Muslim socialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies that sits in our White House. This is the kind of stuff the Stump Licker Bunch does. Then again, why should I be surprised? Because I have a senator who, in his last campaign, symbolically murdered the President of the United States, taking a rifle in a television ad, did Senator Blanche Manchin, and shooting the Obama cap and trade bill. No, really. Andy writing in, by the way, you've got a message from Sandra saying that if you're not on Twitter, you need to be on Twitter, Andy. The things that go back and forth. I couldn't get my breath earlier for laughing at an exchange between Sandra and our buddy Isaac. Jesus. Andy writing in, he says, Senator Harry Reid is just pathetic. You're so right. Where's he been? A record number of filibusters from the senators on the right, anything to stop a bill, every bill. The Senate institution doesn't work. It's a place where the will of the people goes to die. He thinks he can negotiate with them, but he's wrong. These are way, way to the right fascists. They don't negotiate. They're playing hard, hard ball. Again and again, I've said it. There's no fight in these Democrats. They don't have the fight in them. They're throwing verbal snowballs while uranium-laced missiles are hurled back by the Republicans because these Democratic senators have made it. They're the 1%. They have too much to lose if they fight for the 99%. And they're all millionaires. They just are. It's a millionaires club. It's the most exclusive country club on the planet, the Senate of the United States. They're not all completely bad. Some of them do the right thing rather a surprising amount of time. Senator Al Franken is frequently decent. He loses his mind over Israel, but then few are the ones in government who do not. I'll take Bernie Sanders all day long. You give me a Senate made up of Bernie Sanderses, or at least a majority, and you would see this country make some real progress. You really would. But they are hard to move. And they don't understand that the Republicans are playing out of an entirely different playbook. What else this evening? Oh, goodness me. Let's see, do we want to go silly? Before we go silly, since we were talking about no backbone, no guts, and since it is so seldom that we have a clip to run from the for-profit media that sounds like the media actually doing their job, I feel compelled to run this clip. This is a clip from MSNBC. The anchor in question is Tamron Hall. And the exchange is with a reporter, allegedly, from the Washington Examiner. You get the idea. It's a right-wing rag. By the name of Tim Carney. Now, he had been invited onto the show to discuss some of this business regarding Willard Romney's response to the news, the breaking news, that in fact he has been, since at least his teen years, an unrepentant bully. With the white privilege just glowing on him, Tim Carney tried to overtalk and generally be the rude and nasty soul that these right-wingers so frequently are to Ms. Hall. She, however, was having none of it.
So there you have it, Tim, and the point is he's doing local television. That's a local reporter asking about something that is important to of that particular state, and his response, people are raising an eyebrow about.
Okay, well, I'll talk about the marijuana in one second, but what you're doing here is a typical media trick. You hype up a story, and then you justify the second day coverage of the story by saying, oh, well, people are talking about it. Here's how Romney responded to it. No, let's...
Media trick? Now, let's remember, this guy's not a member of the Romney campaign. This guy is a member of the media himself. Just say it.
You don't have to answer a single question I ask you. You do not, and you didn't have to accept the invitation to come on. You knew what we were going to be discussing.
Yes,
I'm not trying to get a job. Hang on, Tim, because you're kind of in my house here. The problem is this. The story is out there, and you're right. I am not saying that we should belabor what happened 50 years ago. We're talking about the response by the campaign and by the governor, not just on this issue. He says, for example...
You're bringing up a meta story here, which is, what is the Romney response to this other non-story? I'm trying to go meta on you and say, here's some media treatment.
You don't want me to go anything on you because you're actually irritating me right now. I'm going to be honest with you. Yes, you are, because you knew the topics we were going to discuss. You knew them. You agreed. And we are not talking or demeaning. Listen, 50 years ago, I was a much tougher kid probably than Mitt Romney was in high school.
I got a hard time believing Tamron Hall is 50. What did you say?
Not talking about the issue of whether he was bullying or not. He says he doesn't remember. To be fair, I cannot say he does. What I'm asking you about is how the campaign has handled this decision, handled this situation, how he handled the Colorado reporter, how he handled same-sex marriage,
Colorado,
where he said he agrees with gay parents being able to adopt, but he does not agree with same-sex marriage. Just the handling of questions beyond the economy. If you're not comfortable talking about that, I am A-okay, but you're not going to come on and insult me. You're not going to come on and insult the network when you knew what you were going to talk about. Done. Now let me talk to Jimmy. I'm done. Jimmy, yes, I am. Jimmy, let me go to you.
I realize I may be allowing myself to be victimized by for-profit media tactics. But there really is a little kernel down inside of me that still thinks that maybe once in a while you run across somebody with some actual ethics and some actual skill in the field of journalism in the for-profit media. I don't. I'm so past arguing and over talking and cross talking. But that just has the feeling of an important moment, because Tim Carney apparently had it in his head that he was going to come on and tell the little woman a thing or two. And instead she told him, you're kind of in my house and you're not going to do this. So, you know, it's Friday on the front porch. We're all up here on the porch. Got our boots off, feet kicked up on the porch rail, taking a little swig out of the jug with the corn cob stopper in it, or maybe a little swig of cider or sweet tea or whatever, getting all hopped up on caffeine, maybe lemonade, who knows what. But just for a moment, we can give Tamron Hall a little golf clap. A little golf clap. Because it was refreshing. Under the subject line, they let them up, Bill writes in from Cleveland. He said, Bob, tell the truth as Ray Charles told it. 1861 to 1865, 600,000 died to solve what was a moral issue, but it was also an economic issue based upon slavery. Reconstruction allowed the economic and a large amount of the inhumanity of slavery to continue. It was 99 years after the war's end for the constitutional anti-slavery laws that already were in the Constitution to be once again signed into law, but the bastards kept coming back to power. Hell, Bob, I thought we crushed the right-wing creeps in 1964 when they were so soundly beaten in the presidential election. I voted for the first time that year for LBJ and peace, says Bill. So much for that idea. But we do that. We let them up. Time and again, we let them up. We get a little victory and we stop to celebrate. Bill's right. There was some celebrating after the 1964 election. Oh, we got them whipped. Meanwhile, they went back and licked their wounds, these John Birchers, these fascists, these right-wing monsters. And they started building machines saying, we will never have that happen to us again. Never again. Meanwhile, the people who had just beaten Barry Goldwater stopped and threw a little party and metaphorically speaking, rifled through the stuff that had been dropped in the hasty retreat of the Repiglicans. And it happened again with Nixon. We almost got Reagan in the middle of all of his filthy, blood-sodden crookedness with Iran-Contra. We bounced George H.W. Bush, only to see a reactionary right-wing Congress with the connivance of a president trying to get along, enact hateful crap like welfare reform and the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and the repeal of Glass-Steagall. And there we were celebrating again in November 2008 when it looked like we would have the House and the Senate and the presidency. And maybe, just maybe this time, we could turn things around. And the Senate sat down to consider its rules as it does every 2 years. And some people with some foresight, especially in 2010, said, look, we know what they're going to be like. They're going to try to stop us at every turn. And Harry Reid said, that would not be the gentlemanly thing to do. You know, because while the right-wing stump licker bunch is out there reenacting that scene from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid where they're establishing the rules... You remember that scene, right? they're about to have a big brawl. But before the brawl can come off, they need to establish the rules. And they, I think this is it. Let's see.
Okay, so we just forget about Logan taking over, okay, Flatnose?
You always said that any one of us could challenge you, Butch.
Well, it's because I figured no one would do it.
Figured wrong, Butch.
You guys can't want Logan.
Well, at least he's with us, Butch. You've been spending a lot of time gone.
Well, that's because everything's different now.
Guns and knives,
Butch. It's harder now. You got to plan more. You got to prepare more.
Guns and knives.
Neither.
Pick.
I don't want to shoot with you, Harvey.
Anything you say, Butch.
Maybe there's a way to make a profit in this. Bet on Logan.
I would, but who'd bet on you? Sundance! When we're done, he's dead. You're welcome to stay.
Listen, I don't mean to be a sore loser, but when it's done, if I'm dead, kill him.
Love to.
No, no, not yet. Not until me and Harvey get the rules straightened out.
Rules? In a knife fight? No rules.
Well, if there ain't gonna be any rules, let's get the fight started. Someone count 1, 2, 3, go.
1, 2, 3, go.
I was really rooting for you, Butch.
Well, thank you, Flatnose.
Yeah, you see? Rules? Rules? And Harry Reid says,
well, yes, the rules. We abide by the Marquis of Queensberry rules here, and there will be no kidney punching, nor punching below the belt. If we shall have a disagreement, we shall have it in right gentlemanly fashion.
Punch. But yeah, that's how it works. God almighty. And it goes on and on. The bullying story? You know, how the Cranbrook Clipper tackled the young man and, we're not gonna have any of that sissy faggot here at Cranbrook. Eleazar, bring me the shears!
Why, yes, Willard.
Tortured a boy because they didn't like his hair. Yeah, Lord of the Flies style. Well, apparently, it's sort of an institutional culture inside the Willard Romney campaign. I don't know if you saw this or not today. But it turns out that one of his big aides is a creepy bastard by the name of Eric Fernstrom. He's the guy who made the Etch-a-Sketch remark, you know. Eric Fernstrom used to be one of those for-profit media journalists. And he worked for the Boston Herald. And he took great joy at one point in destroying a human being. A human being. There was a rather contentious... the phrase used in the story I'm looking at is gadfly individual named Althea Garrison. And Althea Garrison was elected to the Massachusetts House of Representatives. And that didn't sit well with Eric Fernstrom. It was an open secret that Althea Garrison was transgendered. The phrase in the headline I'm looking at refers to her as a trans woman. I think we can just take out the trans and say woman. But Eric Fernstrom set out to destroy Althea Garrison, going so far as to dig into the musty, dusty, moldy stacks of the Vital Statistics Office in Massachusetts and find Althea Garrison's original birth certificate in which she was born male. And while it was sort of an open secret, as the story notes at America Blog, it was an open secret that Althea Garrison was transgendered, but she was living the life that her being was meant to live, that it had never appeared in print. It had never been made the subject of some salacious, tawdry, sick gossip. But Romney aide Eric Fernstrom dug up her birth certificate and printed it as news on the pages of the Boston Herald and ruined her career forever. The way it's described by former Herald reporter Robert Connolly, he says, "I can remember his glee when he found the birth certificate. Published it and brought what the story says was a swift end to Garrison's future on Beacon Hill." Texas Betsy, our blogger, noting the same news story from the Washington Post also shows Romney mistreating a blind teacher. Well, we've got a real winner here. And you know what's amazing is that the teabaggers still don't like him. When in fact, you know what, this all may be false flag. This may be stuff that's coming out there to get the teabaggers to like him. Look, he's as big a sick, sadistic, torturing, miserable member of the stump licker bunch as you are. Look at how many thousands of people he shit on while he was at Bain Capital. Look at what he did to a blind teacher. Look what he did to a child that he deemed improperly different from the rest of the herd. Look what his staff does to people who have done them no harm. Why, look, teabaggers, you really need to get behind Willard, because he's just as mean and sick and psychotic and hateful and dirt ignorant and pig-eyed as the rest of you. He's one of us. Could it be? Could it be? Paranoia. But we'll destroy you. We'll take a little break. That's the end of this Friday on the Front Porch filibobster. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you for the kind contribution that's come in during the program. Thank you very kindly. We got closer, considerably closer, to where we need to be by the 15th of May. With your help. Good ways to go yet. Don't feel like the job's done, because it ain't. but thank you. So, again, we'll take a little break and come back to your calls. Light them up. We won't get to talk for a couple of days. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Every time we lie awake, after every hit we take, every feeling that I get, but I haven't missed you yet. Every roommate kept awake by every science scream we make, all the feelings that I get, but I still don't miss you yet. Only when I stop to think about it.
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five past the hour. Nothing like a good bumper to sort of get your blood moving, is there? This is The Horn. It's Friday on the front porch. I'm Bob. And let us dispense with the shilly-shallying and go forthwith right to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Andy.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm great. You're my hero, man.
What have I done?
At the B of A meeting. That was wonderful.
Oh.
I mean, you left the morning in. I mean, you gave him the cold sweats, man. That is great.
I got to admit, it was a little fun, Andy.
It was a little what?
It was a little fun.
I'll bet.
But, I mean, if you get that opportunity, what are you gonna do? Sit up and soft soap him? You know, these folks are badly in need of some reality spoken here treatment.
You got it exactly correct. They don't hear people like you. They don't hear from the 99%. That's not the where they want. You know, they never really hear what's happening to the common man and what's going on, what the results are of the different investments and different decisions they made. You stuck it right to them. You're my hero. Like I said, that was just great.
You know what? That's the nicest thing anybody's said in a long time. I don't think I've ever been anybody's hero before, Andy. Thank you. Well, that's
the biggest bank, one of the biggest banks in the country, and this guy's a mover and a shaker. That's great.
Rod, I don't know. You know, I was raised by a very egalitarian father who said that, you know, he had no respect for position, but, you know, that respect was earned. And at this point, Brian Moynihan is not, none of his blonde by choice or the silver-haired directors are doing anything to earn the respect of any of us out here that they're effing poisoning.
Well, as I said in my email yesterday, the corporate board is a farce. The directors are appointed by management. They're put there because they know they're going to be stalked on them, and basically they're a rubber stamp. So anything management wants, and also you brought up about the proxies, those proxies are voted on before the meeting. So they already know for the most part what the count is, and if they already have a majority, enough votes, they're not even going to count the votes or ask for the votes that people bring to the meeting because...
Oh, no, that I haven't seen as...
Over.
I mean, the voting process, you know, the voting was opened and then closed in 2 minutes, and then they announced the pre-counted results. And, I mean, I've seen more transparency and legitimacy when the Bristol Palin was on Dancing with the Stars. The room erupted in laughter when they announced the vote totals.
Well, there are times where they do lose, and Citigroup lost recently on the vote for the executive pay. And there have been, Hewlett Packard, I think, lost too recently. There have been a number that the majority does win against executive salaries, and these different kind of rogue, I don't, they're not rogue groups, because I always vote that way myself. And do you know what happens when shareholders don't vote?
No.
The brokerage votes for them. And you know what happens then?
They vote the party line.
You got it. That's a sad...
Well, no, I mean, I thought it was telling, you know, I kind of went, whoa, shit, when the representative of the comptroller of the city of New York stood up. You know, you get a few more comptrollers standing next to him and some stuff will change.
Right. Definitely there are people that manage public money that have a vested interest in the corporate governance of those companies and doing right for their public shareholders because they're owned by the pension fund.
And you know, would it hurt if they didn't pre-count the votes? If maybe the vote was announced a week after or something like that, where they didn't, you know, where it wasn't so obviously a sham, you know, because I couldn't help but think of Johnny Carson as they were talking about the firm that had tabulated the votes and blah blah blah, and I kept thinking, kept in a mayonnaise jar on Funkin' Wagnall's front porch, you know, it was a joke. But by the same token, the other thing that I find fascinating is there had been a previous protest a couple of days before in which some folks, and I know the folks who did it, locked down on a railroad line in North Carolina, stopping a train, a coal train. And the reason they were stopping it was in protest of, get this, Apple, Andy, Apple. Because Apple is building a monumental data center, and a few of them, so is Facebook, so are a couple of other big companies. They're building monumental data centers in North Carolina that are going to be fed nothing but filthy coal energy, coal-fired energy. So, right. You know, that Apple logo's getting a few bruises on it, too.
And rightfully so.
Hey, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question based upon your obvious expertise? Have you ever heard of an outfit called the BlackRock Group?
Sure.
What can you tell me?
Well, I think they're the largest asset manager in the world. I think the guy that runs it is an ex-UCLA guy, Funk. And they have their hands into everything. They manage a lot of money.
Well, I've just been doing a little research and a little homework in advance because, you know, I think there might be some. I would not take this trip overseas if I didn't think there was benefit to it. But I think there is, and I'll be talking to three separate banks, two in France and one in Germany, who are deeply invested in mountaintop removal in the coal industry. And I keep, when I dig into their ownership, I keep seeing BlackRock Group popping up. BlackRock Group is the single largest shareholder in Apple, for instance.
Right, they're a big investor. They manage a lot of other people's money, OPM, and probably some of their own as well.
And what it got me wondering is, when you drill down like that, Andy, is that where maybe some of the pressure needs to be brought to bear?
Yes, absolutely, because they have a lot of proxy voting power, for sure, and they could put pressure on management, and they could change board seats.
I mean, as a single owner, BlackRock owns 5.5% of Apple. Now, that's enough to turn a shareholder resolution, you know, because if we remember the basic rule from the early 20th century, you don't need a majority, you just need enough to turn the outcome.
Well, the rule of thumb, I've always heard, if the investors who are being cantankerous and are going up against management, if they can get 15% of shareholders to go along with it, management usually takes notice, because that's a big number.
Well, the things that were being voted on at Bank of America that were rejected were coming in at 27%, and one of them 40%, maybe
45%. Even though you didn't get a majority, and most of these amendments or these referendums, anyway, these proxy votes don't really have the rule of law, or they can't legally make management do it, but it's an advisory vote anyway. But when you get 15%, at least over 15, people take notice, the analysts take notice, the newspapers will take, you know, the news reporters, the business reporters will take notice, and that starts to build. And usually if you can get 15%, then the next year you come do it again, and you keep on building and building. You know, you get bigger and bigger, especially if the company's not performing well. But 40% is wonderful. That's great.
You know what a share of Bank of America is paying these days?
The share price for Bank of America is only like $7 or $8.
Yeah, it's paying a quarter of a penny. on a quarterly.
And dividends?
Yeah.
Well, they were knocked, you know, they've been knocked down pretty well. All the banks are getting knocked down right now because of what's happening with J.P. Morgan.
Well, good God, $2 billion. You know, $2 billion losses, and you know, metaphorically speaking, Jamie Dimon's head is still attached to his shoulders. How the, does that happen?
Not for long.
Well, I mean, do you think he'll get the apple in the roadmap?
He's definitely lost all credibility. I think his credibility just went down the drain. Even though he's a straight shooter and he speaks right from the hip, and people just aren't going to believe him anymore. And they could lose, you know, this is just the beginning. I just read an article that said they could lose up to $100 billion in these derivative contracts that they did.
That's the whole point. It all went down. It all, you know, boom goes the dynamite, and now they're... You know, they're like a dog returning to its vomit. They just can't resist that shit, can they?
No, they can't. No, they can't. These are credit default swaps again.
Yeah, that's my point.
Right. These credit default, they took a position both on the long and the short side. So they were betting some index of bonds was going to go down by going long, and they also made some proportionate bets betting that they were going to increase. And somehow they really blew it.
I mean, that doesn't even work at the dog track.
And since they did it in London, I haven't seen it verified, but my bet would be they did it on sovereign debt, meaning government bonds. They probably did it on Spain, or they did it on Italy, or they did it on something like that. The same thing that brought MF Global down, and it went the wrong way. They didn't expect it. You know, something strange happened, and it just blew their position out of the water. That's great.
Well, like I said, I've got a chance, and I don't think, you know, I don't think when I go overseas that the halls where these things are being held, I don't think they're going to be bristling with off-duty cops and armed to the teeth gun thugs. So maybe it'll be a little less daunting. You know, because there was that whole feeling of, you know, I'm going to keep both hands clearly in sight. Because those fuckers were ready to shoot. I'm not kidding. They were ready to shoot.
A little intimidation there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was an armed thug in every row.
Unbelievable.
As the meeting began, the agenda said, at the end of the meeting, there will be a question and answer period if time permits.
Never.
And one lady stuck her hand up before the meeting and said, what does this if time permits business mean? Is there going to be a question and answer session? And before she got to the end of her question, Andy,
cut her off.
No, a thug who was two seats over from her was crawling over the person next to her, madam, you've got to leave, you've got to leave, and was reaching behind him for where his gun was. And Moynihan kind of gave him the sit down gesture because he realized that she wasn't mic checking him or something, that it was a real question.
Right.
And he said, yeah, we're going to have a question and answer session. But the thug was ready to do her bodily harm.
Right, it's all about intimidation. They just want to make sure that you think twice before you ask the question you're going to ask. So I'm glad you stood up for him, Bob.
Well, I've never done anything like that before, but I was proud and privileged to have the opportunity, Andy. I really was.
This is where groups have got to go. You've got to go to these director meetings because you got to hit them in the pocketbook, and this is where you hit them in the pocketbook. This is where the investors, all they listen to is the investors because they're the only ones that can turn these managements out. I mean, it is the rainforest action, they've got it right. You go after the possible. You go after the investment.
Well, they did a magnificent job. They truly did.
Yeah. They're the ones that can turn the screw.
But, you know, I wonder, I got to wonder, Andy, if we left a little early because, did you see, Did you see who's meeting in Charlotte now?
Well, yeah, no, other than the Democratic convention. I guess that's going to be in North Carolina.
Well, this was Charlotte, North Carolina, too. But today in Charlotte, Alec began a huge closed-door meeting with legislators from 15 states and the big oil and big energy companies to determine policies and procedures for trying to poison us a little bit more.
Right.
ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, BP, American Petroleum Institute, Americans for Prosperity, you know, the usual suspects.
Right.
And this is at the same time that they got outed. Did you see this sleazy-ass memo about how they're going to turn the American tide of public opinion against wind energy? Did you see that, Andy?
I know Neil Cavuto's already been doing it. I think you mentioned it on your show yourself, saying that some study came out. Maybe it was Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen mentioned it.
That was Brad and Desi.
Will power keep the wind right below the actual blades itself, which is, come on, baloney.
But it's a direct result of this memo. Albert sent it to me first, and it was like, Jesus. Ugh.
Anytime you have wind, the friction of wind, like they used to call it the Chinook winds, come down from Canada, the Rocky Mountains, actually heats the Front Range. And it'll melt all the snow. They call them the Chinooks.
Yeah.
Chinook is an Indian word for melting, snow melting. So anytime you have wind friction, then you're going to have some heat because of the friction.
Well, yeah. I mean, anybody who's ever planted a garden here in the Appalachians knows that you plow your ground and disc it up long about and till it up long about Mother's Day, and you'll have a couple of pre-windy days, and everything will be nice and dry, and you can get your tomatoes and cucumbers in. It's
right.
What wind does. But well, no, this is a, no, this thing though is a full-on strategy with talking points and everything, telling people how to think or how to talk about wind energy, and
right.
it's absolutely disgusting.
It's a big threat to the business, Bob. It's going to hit their bottom line. What kind of energy is going to do in their profits? There's no question about it. It's going to go after tin coal. It's going to go after the fossil fuel industry. It cuts their profits. It's J.D. bar the door. The propaganda campaign goes. They got to stop it. It's just eating their baby. That's eating their lunch, man. And you know, profits is all that matters to these people. I heard the Heartland Institute's doing a full throttle campaign, too, to try to go after wind. It must be all coordinated, I'm sure.
They never cease to amaze me, Andy.
Yeah. As I mentioned, too, you know, you mentioned the proxy vote. After the fact, to get the final tally of the votes, where all the votes actually come in, it's very, very difficult to do. It's like pulling teeth. You know, it's not like you're working with the government when you're working with these corporations. Everything is close to the cuff. It's really hard get anything out of them. I mean, you really got to be pressured. The only people that can pressure these corporations are the shareholders, and they can maybe finally get the final tallies of these votes, but those votes were great. And I mentioned yesterday that Alex Marshall editorial on last Friday's paper, How to Get Business to Pay Its Fair Share, he goes in and mentions James Madison knew about this, the chartering of corporations, you know, everybody gravitating to Delaware, where it's the lowest common denominator, and trying to do something about these loopholes. There's the Delaware loophole that Rick Smith talks about a lot, and there's theory of the Reno loophole that Apple has. They never pay any state taxes. I don't know. Apple's tax rate last year was only 9.3%. The total effective tax rate, they pay no state taxes whatsoever, and they're the richest corporation in the world. So this has got to be reined in. We've got to stop this. We need some kind of national act. As I said, if you read that editorial, this guy Marshall does a nice job in explaining that.
Yeah, I went and read that, and it was a great article. And Yeah, I need all the educating I can get on this, this high finance business.
You also, with Europe, Deutsche Bank, which strikes me as being the biggest German bank, that says most of the investments, I would think they'd be the biggest player in coal, and then you got, in France, it would be, Sociale or Societe. I can't remember.
Societe Generale?
Yeah. I think they would be the biggest French bank.
That's who I'm talking to.
Oh, great. I don't know about great, but...
And in Germany, Commerzbank.
Commerzbank, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. But I was just going to bring Germany, too. There was a Financial Times article on March 5th. I want to mention it, that the Greens have so much power now in the German parliament, and the Social Democrat, which is more the socialist, they're putting pressure on Merkel. And Merkel's days are number two after what happened to Sarkozy. I think she's on thin ice.
With regard to Commerzbank, especially, the German government itself owns, I think, something on the order of 40%.
Right.
So, if you talk to the Greens and you talk to the Social Democrats, or the socialists or whatever, maybe you get enough pressure brought to bear to make sure that they get completely out of any positions on coal whatsoever.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, as it becomes, there is an element, anybody who's ever watched somebody looking for a fix or known about it, if one guy doesn't have what you're looking for, you go to the next guy and you keep knocking on doors till you get your fix. And that's what the coal industry will do. So, purpose is to go and make it impossible for them to find anybody who will front their habit.
Right.
Filthy, freaking rich. Why do they have to have this? Well, they have to have it because it's basically a giant corporate check-kiting scheme.
Well, you need capital. It's a capital-intensive business. They got to keep on getting investors. They got to raise debt. And the banks are the ones that got the money, so they're who you go to, and they're your underwriter. To try to raise this debt, they do all the meetings and get together the investors. So in order to build these mines and to do the capital expenditures, the CapEx, and to build these ugly and to buy all the equipment you need, you gotta have capital. And it's always use other people's money, OPM. You don't want to use your own money.
Oh, right.
They're other people's money. And the Europeans' money is just as good as anybody else's. Right? But the Social Democrats and the Greens have put the pressure on Merkel saying, if you try to ratify the treaty that they have there, and the Euro treaty, and make it a little less stringent on the deficit, the annual deficit they have, and the total debt, the GDP that they have, if there's any for to even raise Euro-centric bonds that span the whole Eurozone, that the Greens are going to ask for that and the Social Democrats, they want a transaction tax on all security transactions. And, we're pushing for that, too. And Tim Geithner, of course, is the biggest impediment to that in the United States. But the Greens have said, we touch this Euro treaty, we're going to have this transaction tax. And the finance industry is going to pay up, which is kind of cool. They said that with no uncertain terms.
Well, it would be nice to see that get legs and get legs over here, too, as well, Andy.
Yeah. And a shout-out to Sandra on your March 28th show.
Yeah.
Where she brought out the APAC and the Obama's statement that we've got your back with the Goldstone Report. Yeah, I wish Obama had the back of us 99%ers, of us working people. He's got Israel's back where he can lie to the world community and try to foster support for Israel. He's got their back. He don't have our back. I just thought Sandra was great bringing. Yeah, he's got APAC's back. Yeah, well, where do you see what happened? And then, also, Bob, I didn't talk about that primary vote in West Virginia. That was great. Obama lost 40% of his vote in the primary.
To a prison inmate.
Right. A Texas felon, wasn't it?
Yeah, but before you get too excited, Andy, understand that the last time a West Virginia Democratic primary was held and Barack Obama was on the vote, or on the ballot, 23% of the Democrats voting in that one said, I can't vote for a nigra. So that was them. That was them plus. That was them plus a bunch of coal fockers. That wasn't. That was not pissed off progressives.
Right. I understand. I just thought it was kind of wild that Obama did get 60%, but it still looks bad that a felon.
Oh, Romney.
That was
well, I don't know. You know, it will probably be one of those rare instances, but in West Virginia, I am comfortable predicting that Willard Romney will beat Barack Obama like Barack Obama owes him money, okay? Willard Romney will beat Barack Obama in West Virginia in November, probably by on the order of 50 points.
Wow.
I mean, it's going to be it's that, and so that's why I don't understand why he continues to bow and scrape to the coal industry, unless, of course, you take into account that the coal industry is in places like Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Ohio as well.
Right.
You know,
well, the guy's a neoliberal, Bob. I don't have any. He's a corporatist. He's a neoliberal, even though he's not going to get the popular vote in those or in West Virginia for certain, and he couldn't last time, and he. You just said it. John Edwards wasn't even running. He was already out of the race, and he won the primary. It's mainly because he's got the right color skin. I mean, there's just a lot of that there. I'm sorry. Mr. Obama is a corporatist. He is a neoliberal. He does not want to upset the corporate world. And he's doing it also for your Democratic senators, your Chief Rockefeller and Blanche Manchin.
Oh, Jesus. Blanche. You know, Blanche and our governor, they're not sure they're going to support Obama because he's got a war on the coal. Now, never mind the fact that coal jobs are actually up in this state.
Right.
There's still billboards that show West Virginia, Kentucky, and Virginia says the Obama no job zone.
Right. Obama's like Harry Reid. He's always trying to put out, you know, those peace gestures. You know, he's always putting out the,
Yeah, but how many times can you reach out with the olive branch and draw a bloody stump back before you've run out of appendages to reach with? I mean, Harry Reid's turned into that knight in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. He doesn't have any limbs left to reach.
Absolutely. The guy's a moron. The filibuster was never supposed to be used like this. They filibuster everything. They've made it just like the California Assembly, where you have to get a 3/4 vote to pass anything. Except it's turned into a supermajority.
Right, we must understand the point behind that, Andy, is not just to obstruct, but also to make America absolutely convinced that government has failed and government is the enemy. Because that leads to voter malaise, and that keeps people away from the polls. It's like that little anarchist who came up to me a couple of days ago in Charlotte. Well, you don't think you're really going to get anything done by working with this filthy Congress, do you? You know, and the only thing I could do was look at him and say, well, what do you want me to do, just sit here and let them kill me?
Absolutely.
I mean, I can't stop mountaintop removal with a goddamn drum circle.
Right.
And I don't mean to be dismissive of that, but it's a fact.
Absolutely. I get the same thing here. They tell me that the anarchists, I go, you're like an ostrich, man. You put your head in the sand. We do have a system here. If you don't work the system, there are people working it against your interest. Aren't you going to fight them? Will you fight? And I always wear these Norman Solomon stickers on my jacket because I work for Norman. I go house to house for him. I go, you guys can do that too. Do you want to help get a progressive election? You want to help get somebody for working people electing? Help me out. Go door to door.
Yeah, and see, I ran into that little dude and I walked away thinking, you know what? I bet if I looked in his backpack, I'd find me some Ron Paul literature.
Right. Right. And they're ignorant. They don't know history. They don't know what Ron Paul really stands for.
This guy couldn't have told you how many branches of government there are.
Right. And that comes up all the time. I, The only thing that matters is the guy's voting record, man. That's all that matters. Even though the newspapers try to tell you something different like they do with my senator here, Dianne Feinstein. Oh, people love her because she never gets into trouble. She's never controversial. She's so good. That's baloney. Look at her voting record. Anything for working people, she's against. The total plutocrat.
Well, you know, go ask one of the folks that works at one of her hotels. I think it's Diane and her husband, whom they've done everything in their power to keep from being represented by a union. I mean, just saying, it's reality.
Richard Bloom is her husband, and he's just a billionaire. If he's not a billionaire, he's close to it. He's got investments all over the place. They basically run the state in a lot of ways. They run the board. They're trying to privatize the university system, and he's the main person behind that because he's a big trustee at the University of California. So then to some unfinished business, I keep mentioning John Corzine, and just want people to know, too, you know, three strikes with John Corzine. Number one, 1999, it came out that he was doing laddering, and Matt Taibbi has brought this out, how he was giving IPO shares to chief executives. They do investment banking business, and they were just spinning these shares. They were just turning them over and getting new IPO shares after they sold their shares, and that was found illegal. But John Corzine got away with that. It's called laddering. He didn't know anything about it. Then he goes to be governor of New Jersey, and he put $6 billion of New Jersey municipal bonds into auction-rate securities where they got tied up in a big scandal there. And the state of New Jersey lost hundreds of millions of dollars because they had to unwind themselves from all these auction rates, which is $6 billion worth. Cost them hundreds of millions of dollars to unwind. No investigation, no nothing, because both Corzine on the Democratic, you know, DLC side and the Republicans all gave Wall Street just windfall profit. So he gets away with that. That was strike two. And now strike three is MF Global, you know, where he's got over $1 billion, $1.6 billion in investor money, mainly farmers and people who legitimately make products, all hung up. He's probably going to get away with that, too. Three strikes, Bob. He's plutocrat by John Corzine. If he was put away in 1999, if he was soiled then and they just got rid of him, they put him in jail for a little while, hung him out to dry, maybe he couldn't have done the further damage he's done, but he says, these plutocrats, these 1%ers, keep on coming back. They never get prosecuted. They're never brought to a just trial. There's no justice at all. It's horrible. I mean, that's my thing. You think down the road that whether Eric Holder's going to get around to this, but these guys just keep coming back and doing their damage, man. It's unreal. That's the problem with our system. That's why we need the 1% to be reined in big time, you know? And then the David Attenborough, Albert keeps bringing him up. I sent you that piece.
Yeah, and that's largely a function of, you know, the way he delivers his VOs. And you know, if you ever went and saw that one little link of the Clever Monkeys of Jersey Shore, it works. It's funny.
Uh-huh.
But no, David.
Opportunities for energy exploration and commercial shipping because, you know, the ice melt happening in Antarctica. Oh, this is a great opportunity. This is David Attenborough. Where's the warning for climate change, man? He doesn't bring up that this is brought about because of fossil fuels and climate warming. Oh, this is a great opportunity for the industry to mine the hell out of Antarctica now that the ice melt has occurred.
Oh, Jesus. Wait till they find coal in Antarctica. I can't wait, Andy. I just can't wait. Hey, brother, it's awful good to hear from you. You have a great weekend, all right?
All right, you too, man. Great. Thanks for getting up there and spending all the time and effort to go before that board. People take notice, man. The plutocrats, the 1%ers, take notice when you enter their house and you take a guy and make him sweat like that. That's great, Bob.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you sincerely. I appreciate it.
Mucho kudos, man. Mucho.
Thanks.
Great job.
Thanks. Bye. Later. Have a great weekend.
Later.
Bye.
You too, man. You too.
our buddy Andy calling from California. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so that meeting at the stock meeting, that sounded pretty intense. But my question is, what's up with all the weaponry? I mean, there's not money at the shareholders meeting. I mean, I just was so shocked by your description on what was going down in there, because people were just doing a normal engagement with a publicly traded corporation. I mean, it's just I hate to keep using the word fascist, but my God.
Well, but, you know, if the shoe fits.
Well, it just seems to epitomize the sort of that merger, you know, where the state is pandering and catering to this giant corporation.
Yeah, and see, here's the fun part. The Charlotte cops that were in there weren't even on duty. They were off-duty Charlotte cops that had been rented by Bank of America.
Yeah, no. I mean, and the laws that they've passed to, you know, keep people from getting together. I mean, you can't carry a pencil or whatever they
can. Oh, no, a woman carrying a purse that had magic markers in it was subject to arrest in Charlotte on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, the idea that they pass an ordinance saying, you know, an extraordinary event, and all of a sudden a shareholder meeting is an extraordinary event. I mean, people need to sort of wake up.
Well, yeah, see, and it's worth, this is a beautiful example of something that I've heard it said a number of times, that fascism is easy as long as you keep your head down. See, if nobody had come to protest that at that shareholder meeting, all would have been well. And that's the way fascism works. You're supposed to keep your head down, sit on the couch, watch the TV, and get absorbed in what the Kardashians are doing.
Well, yeah, it's like, wasn't that Rosa Luxemburg who said that, you know, you don't know you have chains if you're not moving?
Exactly.
You know, and it's just like, yeah, you know, if that isn't for fucking true for this country, I don't know what is. That quote should be just sort of everywhere, because that's exactly what's going on here, along with, you know, inverted totalitarianism and managed democracy. I mean, you know, the U.S. really, it's essentially kind of gone. Nothing is sort of functioning as it should, and the idea that, you know, that whole Harry Reid, just hearing his voice, I'm like, oh my God, because it's completely undemocratic now. The people,
I mean, even though he said that Merkley and Udall were right, you're right. The tone of his voice tells you he still doesn't get it.
No, and the idea that the Senate, the, you know, one of the sort of bodies of Congress, is now completely unresponsive to the people, because we can't even get together a majority. It won't,
even if you have one.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't function as it's supposed to. So, I mean, it's illiberal, it's undemocratic, and that sort of high-pitched voice of his just sort of adds to the depressing drama of it all, you know? But anyway, I mean, yeah, more power to you for speaking to that idiot. I mean, these people are just sort of walled off, and the fact that you could get that close, yeah, you know, I'm sure they don't like that. That didn't go down well, I bet.
Well, you know, there was all that Mr. Moynihan going on, and, you know, I just figured I'd talk to him like we were having a beer, you know.
Who that, Mr. This and That? It's like, you know, why? I don't, you know, that denotes some sort of level of respect, or you're some sort of subordinate. You don't work for him.
No, there wasn't going to be no bowing and scraping. Now yeah. Marty just sent a little something in. He said, "Now I'll counter Sandra's argument and say that the America that has disappeared never really existed." And you know, there's a certain amount of truth in that. But we also, you know, we made strides forward. It's all this retrograde motion that we're experiencing now that proves so disconcerting, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but also, I mean, yeah, it only exists if it's being utilized, and right now it's in a state of decay. You know, it's not being used, i.e. the people aren't sort of participating on a level that they should, you know, bowling alone and all that. It really is true. If you don't have any sort of civic life, everything else is going to decay. And, yeah, of course. I mean, the U.S. was sort of founded on a fraud, wasn't it?
Well, it was that and bigotry and prejudice.
You know, and genocide and you know, all sorts of horrific things that go on. But the thing is, it's, you know, it's still, yeah, I am sort of... Yeah, shell shocked by the whole thing.
Well, I don't know if you saw this, Sandra, but did you see the legislation that was introduced as an amendment by that sick freak Representative Paul Brown of Georgia?
No.
He introduced an amendment to some bill. I can't remember which right off the top of my head. It's not really salient because the essence of his bill was to strip all funding for enforcement of the Voting Rights Act in 2012, like yesterday.
Well, that's not going to... I mean, I can't imagine that going anywhere.
Well, in this House of Representatives? But even if it doesn't go anywhere, you know, John Lewis from Atlanta had to get up on the floor of the House and school Brown from his own state and remind him of why the Voting Rights Act exists. I mean, retrograde motion, and that is that.
Yeah, no, it's like the fourth turning, you know. It's like these people, when people disappear, when the calamities were happening, all hell breaks loose. We seem to be coming to that point in so many different areas, you know, when you get... that's crazy. No, I have to look that one up. But the other reason why I called is I know, you know, Mike Malloy was touching on it, but if I may, like... Because I'm in California, you know, hey. Okay, so, you know, there's experts who are, like, suggesting that, you know, you need the everyday look to make sure that Reactor 4 is still standing if you're in California. Because if that shit ain't standing, you need to get the hell up out of here.
Yeah, move east.
Move. I mean, just, you know, so the equivalent of 800 bombs going off all at once. That cover is blown completely off of those rods, so it's just exposed and it's covered in water. And they're like, well, if it should collapse, you know, they're talking about an extinct level event, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I realize that, what was the other thing I heard? Well, you know, it needs to stay together for 4 years, because that's how long it's taking to cool down. So... it's nothing they can do for 4 years about this, and we just have to pray that they don't get another seven.
Well, the problem is, even without another level 7 earthquake or another tsunami, the damn thing could dissolve simply because it's been baked.
Yeah, well, anyway, I just think that, Ron Wyden was over there with his timid ass, and he, you know, made some noise, but you know, ain't nobody listening to him. And it's just scary, you know. It's horrifying, and you can't even wrap your head around it. But
yeah, I think Chris kind of schooled us all on it last night, and it's Jesus, it's frightening. I mean, I'm looking at a map right here of this sort of long ellipsoidal thing of red, orange, and yellow, and Everything to western Montana is yellow, and as far south as southern California and way into Arizona, and maybe New Mexico, is all getting hit with what the map legend says is 750 rads.
Well, yeah, I mean it's emanating every minute of every damn day, and it's. You know, we have to. What did I read? I was just like, oh, TEPCO came out saying, oh, everything's okay. TEPCO.
Yeah, right. These are not the droids you're looking for, right?
You know. Anyway,
this map is horrifying. 10 days to get 750 rads in the western U.S. But then, like, the Aleutian Islands chain and southern Alaska is 6 days to get 1,500 rads. You know, God bless America.
Well, at any rate, I just think that, like, you know, it's not like there's anything that can be done, per se, on our end, but it's very disturbing that there isn't a sort of international UN type coming together to solve this problem, if you know what I mean.
Right, but the fact
is, it's an international security issue. If I want to go military, anything to get these people's attention. I mean, I really don't understand the sort of complacency, hide your head in the sand. Or what about this?
No, I mean, you've got nuclear experts from around the world begging the United Nations and the Japanese government to get serious about it. I mean, it's not like this is something that's happening over on Alex Jones's website.
Well, it's happening there, too, but I...
Oh, okay, sorry. Of course it is.
These are mainstream-type voices that are sort of piping up about this, you know?
Right, and naturally, who are the voices that are arrayed against them? It's the same freaks who, basically the same freaks who say, oh, there's no such thing as global warming. Or the Dominionists say, well, Jesus will provide.
Yeah, I really don't have anything to add. I just was kind of terrified here on the West Coast, you know, reading about what could happen if just that one reactor falls apart on us.
And, I mean, what are the odds? And I don't say that as in, you know, oh, it's 1,000,000 to 1.
No, we're not. No, I don't think so. I think, you know, if what they're saying is true, that there is some sort of years where this has to be propped up before they can, and they don't even know then. Apparently they're hoping there's going to be technology developed to, hello?
and again, that's the same way the global warming deniers act. Well, you know, when it gets serious enough, we'll develop the technology to just cool the planet. You know, we'll put some big fans in space. You know. Because technology will save us. Well, it doesn't. Technology doesn't save you if you don't start from the essential premise that there is, in fact, a problem.
Well, the thing we need to keep our eye on, and I don't mean to be glib, but I don't know if you remember that sort of map that showed all those rich assholes flying to the Super Bowl. We need to look at that map and see when there's a sort of mass exodus of these bitches from New York going. Oh, look, they're all going to Sydney. I wonder why.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing that happens when there's talk of an SEC coaching change. All the, you know, all the real serious hardcores go to the airport and start writing down tail fin numbers. You know, that's how they busted busted Auburn University a few years back for playing footsie with Bobby Petrino. You know, you've got these hardcores that watch tail numbers, and it's exactly the same thing. Yeah, when the 1% starts heading to New Zealand,
Yeah,
worry.
Right. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm just being a bit glib, but I was sort of a bit aghast when I saw, you know, how many of those types were trying to get to the Super Bowl. It's like, ew, because they had this sort of map showing the movement.
And Bill in Cleveland, just under the subject line of holy crap, Sandra, wrote in, what or who in the universe feels that the Japanese owe us a little dose of radiation? You know, there's that. Sometimes the goddess of irony is a little bit on the cruel and malicious side.
Oh, well, no, the whole thing is just some sort of horrible theater of the absurd, you know? It is. It's, you know, there is too much of that in regards to this madness in Japan. But, you know, those poor people, I don't even know what the hell they're facing for that whole small island, really. Because the government had plans. They were like, should we try to evacuate Tokyo? Tokyo, what does it have there? 25 million, something?
Yeah, where are you going to evacuate to?
Anyway.
North Korea's not got their doors open. China don't want you.
I mean, there's some
ancient, rather profound hatreds bouncing around there.
Well, no, but then, of course, you know, I'm sure you have all these sort of Malthusian sustainability freaks, you know, having orgasms about some aspects of it, you know, the die-off that they're all sort of hoping for.
Yeah, as long as it ain't them.
Well, I don't know. I just, you know, all of that is just really doing my head in, you know. But anyway, it's no reason to even talk about it because it's like, yikes.
Well, no, there are logistic things involved here, Sandra, that you wonder if, I mean, if we're talking about it here, you got to hope that somebody else is thinking about it at higher levels. For instance, you know, when an earthquake hits and devastates an area, you know, you chopper in folks and, or, you know, even the response to Haiti, you get people in there and you start doing things to try to prevent the things that happen that come, you know, the apocalyptic horsemen that ride in afterwards. But what do you do when the disaster means certain death for everybody who goes to rescue them? I mean, it sort of rises above the level of Spock with his hand on the glass talking about the good of the many being more important than the good of the few or the one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, the Red Cross is not going to go into Tokyo when Tokyo starts glowing in the dark.
Well, that dumbass race car driver didn't want to go there without her damn food the other week, right?
You saw that too, huh?
I was just like, bitch, stay home, shit. I'm sorry. No, but see, and I have to mention, you know, I have to go out with the Obama, you know, saying that he's involved. I guess a marriage is okay for the queers. But of course, you have to go President Buchanan on a
states' rights
and bring up the states. I was like, no, we, you know, or Douglas, you know, talking about how each state should choose whether or not they got the slaves. I mean, you know. At any rate, I'm not gonna give him a hard time because that was a big move, and I'm happy that he did something on it. So,
yeah, it's just it's a little worrisome. I got an email from Jim when it happened. He said, well. The president has just committed political suicide, and I hope he hasn't.
Oh, no, listen, do you know what the fundraising that fool is doing on top of that? The fags are pulling out the cash.
And that, you know, that's the meme the right wing's using. Well, you know, he's abandoned his corporate donor base for his gay donor base.
Whatever he has to do, you know, ain't nobody tripping on that. What the hell are they going to do? Wait until they smother... They're going to smother Obama practically to death with the amount of money that's going to be rolling out here soon. So I guess he does what he needs to do. And, you know, he had moved the dial a bit. He's the president, you know, and he said something that needed to be said for a long time, you know, right after North Dome Carolina with their constitutional amendment.
Oh, I know, and Billy Graham rising shakily up off of his... Alzheimer's bed.
You know what? I really thought that had gone to glory. When I saw that, I said, damn it, is he back? And then I realized he hadn't left. So.
No, but it's time to pack for glory, don't you think?
Oh, I thought, yeah, I was thinking, oh, no. And then, of course, the last thing I wanted to see was cheering Negroes. I'm like, sit down. Sit down.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to avoid the... But you know, fundamentalism is fundamentalism, and you really don't have there's no race calculation in it.
No, but I'm thinking Negroes. Don't you realize the last time they amended the Constitution was so Blackie couldn't get married to nobody else? I mean, it's just the irony is like my head is spinning. You see what I'm saying? Spinning.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you sort of don't bother to teach people their history or their civics or. Any other of that stuff. But I tell you what, you and Isaac were slaying me before the hour before showtime. I mean, you were laying me freaking low.
Shut up! You know, you know what? Is he killing me with that? Okay, I know what you talked about. You know I had to go there.
Yeah. Steve Harvey.
Oh, God! No, it's just... I'm just like, I looked at that.
Yeah, if you're an atheist, I'm just not talking to you. I got nothing to say to you. You think all this just happened?
And it's just so wrong. And to me, I'm sitting there looking at that video thinking, look at all the white people nodding, so grateful. you know, that some dumbass Negro is on TV talking like that. And like I said in the email, you know, straight talk, and then I had to take me out. No, real talk. And I was like, damn, ain't that the truth? Any kind of shit is ignorant. No, that's real talk. And I'm like,
see, that's the one that laid me out.
I'm like,
real
no.
talk.
I'm like, no way. And, you know, he's, you know, it was just disturbing. But, of course, Isaac didn't leave me out because he did provide that comedian.
Oh, God. That was just the perfect whipped cream on top of it all was, what's his name? Keenan.
It was fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live doing Steve Harvey hosting Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. you just gotta look it up on the YouTubes or whatever. Look up Keenan Steve Harvey SNL. I was ruined. I was just ruined. When they got to the question with all the Icelandic names.
Right.
I mean, I was over. We've experienced that phenomenon a few times on this program where I just kind of lose it for 5 or 10 minutes and cannot quit laughing. I'm just grateful that happened before showtime.
Oh no.
And the fact that they had Precious as the contestant across from him.
Listen, I couldn't even believe that. I was like,
read a damn question.
What? And then she was, beating him up at the end there?
Oh, had him by the throat.
No, that whole exchange, you know, I was just like, oh, my God. Because of Steve Harvey thing, it's appalling. You know, he's appalling to get up there talking that mess, you know, with the sort of, male sexuality is totally dependent on women, that whole bullshit. I'm like, are you kidding me with that?
Yeah, the reason men cheat is because there's women out there want to cheat with them.
Right, and he's saying, oh, if you know, you need to find some dumb chick, then you can tell her anything and get laid. I mean, it was all so... He's just a misogynist, you know, homophobic.
Well, but when he says that shit, don't you know that was the approach he took, you know, back before he found Jeebus or whatever it was? Or maybe still taken? Yeah, bring the stupid ones to me.
Oh, God. Yeah, well.
Now, for all we know, he's hanging out weekends with Kobe. That's just how they roll.
Oh, no, but it was just so, yeah. I mean, that video is hilarious, whoever put that all together, because what an idiot. I'm sorry. I don't even know what to say about it, except that people buy into that shit, though. That's the thing that's, you know, Steve, you know, he has some sort of credibility.
Yeah, what happened to that argument, Sandra, that the right wing used to make about whenever some celebrity would speak, oh, he just needs to shut up, he's just a celebrity, he don't know nothing. But if they're out there hating on the gay folk, well, they're damned experts, right?
Or making excuses for why they're some, you know, trifling-ass man. That's another one that gets to me. You're an irresponsible jerk, and it's our fault. Give me a break, all right? I wasn't even... That's the thing that drives me over to a cliff. but it was a funny... I will fully agree with you. That was a hella funny exchange with Isaac. I'm glad he included you, because that was must tweet, whatever you want to call
that was,
it.
Yeah, that was just tweet bait. That's all that was.
Really funny. At any rate.
Yeah, and if you want to see it, and I'm gonna run some of the audio here in a minute because it's too good not to.
It's all short, you know, it's all quick.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, and the title is "Shit Steve Harvey Says."
Oh, you know what, damn it! I forgot since Andy was there. I swear, is Andy on Twitter? Andy, get on Twitter.
Yeah, because this conversation just keeps going on.
It's crazy. I know. I don't know if he is into that or not, but it would be funny.
Well, I hate to admit it, but, you know, Facebook, not so much. But I get a hell of a charge out of Twitter. I do. I don't know why.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. Earlier this week, I deactivated Facebook. I can't get with it because... It's too weird.
Yeah, and now they're going to run. And now they're going to run their data center on coal-fired electricity.
Twitter jumped up again when they said no. they're starting to say no to these subpoenas. Did you see that story?
No.
It's very interesting. They are now refusing to turn over people's accounts and stuff. So, you know, I'm all over Twitter if they're starting to do that madness, you know, where they're sort of standing up for people's privacy. I'll send that link to you because, yeah, I was taken aback. I was surprised. But, no, but Twitter, you know, I think Twitter's great. And, you know, it can go from the serious to the...
The serious to the absurd and the silly.
Informative and...
Yeah, in less time than science presently is capable of measuring.
You know, and yeah, you know, so I do like it quite a bit. I don't know, I just, Facebook seems to be, it's doing too much. Now they had this sort of timeline, that's too weird.
The fact that you, the stupid games and all the stuff that wants access to all my friends and my birth certificate and... Jesus, I mean, all I wanted to do was post a comment on Alternet. Come on.
Yeah, but I know if you have, you know, I mean, for what you're doing and the show and stuff, I'm sure, you know, the Facebook is fairly useful.
Yeah, but one of these days I'm going to clean it out. But, you know, there's so many people out there now, it's hard to do. I got people on there, you know, there's two groups I want there. Okay, three. Family, dear friends from my past, and folks who listen to the show. And I got too many people. If I knew how to use the Facebook, I'd just put out a question. How many of you people listen to the show? And everybody who answered positively, I'd keep, and everybody else would go bye-bye. Because I'm tired of getting involuntarily joined to some group.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. I wasn't interested in the sort of Vine, you know, the network aspect of it, which I know is ridiculous to say, because it is a network, but there's very little, you know, the control factor is all being absorbed by Facebook, you know, because they're getting free content that's created by us, and then they're monetizing it, and it just, and now they're about to do their IPO, and it's just kind of like, oh God.
And before you go, I got to share one with you though, since we're talking about all this social media stuff. And I mentioned her a little bit ago in terms of voting transparency and corporate governance. Guess who has entered the fray on the question of President Obama's support, wishy-washy though it may be, for marriage equality?
Who?
Bristol. Bristol Palin. She wrote a blog post called Hail to the Chiefs, Sasha and Malia.
All right. And this is after he especially said not to go after Palin's kids. Well, here's your payback, Mr. Obama. Wow. Yeah, I heard about that. I heard it was incoherent, too.
Oh, it was. And, you know, there's that whole cluelessness the factor there. You know, here she is, single, unwed mom of a fundamentalist mommy who believes in abstinence, mind you. And she writes, we know that in general, kids do better growing up in a mother-father home. Ideally, fathers help shape their kids' worldview. Oops. You know, just giant oops. Because, you know, daddy ain't exactly around.
Well, what? Oh, no. These people are, I mean, it's just... Wow.
You know, a little question in response to her saying, where's your baby daddy?
Yeah, exactly. You know, in doing some reality show somewhere in Hollywood, right?
I guess. You know, she tried living in Arizona, but that didn't work out. I think she moved back to Alaska Stan, didn't she?
Oh, well, so their revenue streams must be dwindling.
Jesus.
No, they're horrible. But actually, you know what? I can't even believe this, but who is this SOB that's selling this gun range target with, you know, some outline of Trayvon Martin?
Oh, Jesus. I looked at, I couldn't open it, Sandra. I couldn't open it. I was going to throw things.
Yeah, no. It's bad. It's pretty bad. You know, they have, I don't know what that candy was. I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, all of it is just, it's stunning and it's really just awful. And the person saying, "Well, I'm just trying to profit off of it." I mean, that was the response when the person was questioned. And it's just like, "Oh, MG, you know?
Yeah. Hey, I gotta share with you. I got an objection in.
Oh, okay.
The use of the F word in regard to the gay community. I don't know how to address it. It's one of those things the gay community uses, and you know the color community uses the N word and throws it around. I don't know. I think just you know when you use that, if tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth. You're not using it derogatorily or as a cudgel or in any wise to demean or diminish. Am I fair in saying that?
No. I mean, I won't use it if it's offending anyone though. But no, it certainly isn't in regards to that. No, I mean.
Yeah, there's a shade of difference between Willard Romney saying "Come here, you," and tackling a kid and cutting his hair and. Yeah.
Oh no, but you know, language is what it is, and if it is offensive to you know people listening in our audience, certainly you know I won't use it.
So you know, and I don't mean to create an awkward moment, but
that's
yeah, fine. I want folks to be happy and understand that there's no meanness involved here, but I don't know.
No, I understand, and you know, and. At the end of the day, you know, I really don't have too many problems offending, as you know, Bob. But feel free to point out when it crosses over the line. I'm not that thin-skinned. Oh my God, please.
No, but by the way, I got to tell you, I just found Isaac's email containing the Steve Harvey Saturday Night Live thing. So that thing's gonna. Queue up here rather quickly, so because I don't want anybody. I kind of worry about playing inside baseball sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, but this just you know it deserves to be heard. Oh God, and I'll probably fall apart all over again. Marty writing in. Bristol couldn't handle Arizona. Did Arpaio ask for her papers or something? Jesus.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. Did you see that photo? By the way, I had one of those right wing news releases earlier today, Sandra. It was a real dandy. Saying, you know, "How dare the Justice Department be upset that Joe Arpaio's people sent this photograph of a Chihuahua in a scuba suit with the caption under it that said Mexican Navy SEAL, a Chihuahua in a scuba suit." And that's what gets circulated around Joe Arpaio's office in Arizona.
Well, are they suing? I mean, are they suing him? What is?
Yeah, they're taking action. He could ultimately be removed from office if there's any justice on this planet.
No, I didn't realize the dude is like 80.
Well, it generally takes somebody about that age, in that sort of psychographic bracket, to be that hateful, doesn't it?
Well, no, I just didn't realize that he. I mean, wow! They don't have sort of an age where you have to retire in law enforcement down there.
Apparently not. Well, see, if you were just some deputy in a cruiser, yes. But if you are the elected high sheriff, no. So you can be the generalissimo and be 90 years old and gumming your oatmeal, and crazier than a bedbug, which is basically a job qualification in Arizona, and you get to stay in office until people don't elect you anymore.
Right. I don't know why. I was just sort of taken aback when I saw what his age was. It's just like, man, just leave already.
Yeah, and the Greene County, Virginia, was it, where the guy is proposing armed revolution if Barack Obama is reelected? These people are getting frightening. You know, rooms full of armed thugs in something as, I mean, shareholder meetings, Sandra. You know, that's where Mr. and Mrs. Thurston Howell III go and talk through their teeth, right? Oh, lovely. Our shares are not appreciated. Ho, ho, ho. And now it's a room full of, Jesus. And the funny thing is, one of the other people who'd been to a bunch of these things before said, well, you know, the one nice thing about all this is they lay out a really tasty spread. Lots of good food in there. Bank of America. I mean, there wasn't so much as a bottle of damn water.
Well, you definitely have to sort of keep your eye out for what the security setup is if you, you know, when you do those European dates.
Yeah, but I gotta hope that maybe it's not, well, I don't know, maybe it is that bad over there.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, did you say one was in Frankfurt?
Yeah, and the other two were in Paris.
That is the home of the endless American military installation.
Oh, yeah, what is that, Rhein-Main Air Force Base?
Yeah, I think it's, yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, still, though, that's, you know, good work that you're doing there. I hope that comes off.
Well, I do too. I think it will. It's just going to be a little bit crazy. I'm going to be on the road constantly from the 16th to about the 25th. And having mentioned Twitter earlier, the best I can say is that I'll try to keep in touch via the tweets.
Yep. Okay, well, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, take care, Sandra. Thanks a bunch. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
This is Kevin.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin?
Not much. Hey, you were talking about the Fukushima thing.
Yeah.
And it got me to thinking, what other weapon in the history of the world have you ever heard of that there is not a cure for an injury from that weapon? A bullet, a knife,
an arrow.
Whatever. You plug the hole if it's not immediately fatal.
If you had, well, you know, blowgun darts, yeah. Poison, maybe
right.
That
yeah.
Counts.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Radiation, we created that, the atomic bomb in the 1945, used it on a country, and then began using it for supposed clean energy, but there is absolutely no cure for radiation poisoning. How smart are we as a world to be using something that if we have something like Japan happen, there is absolutely nothing we can do for it once it starts blowing out to the four winds of the earth? And it just boggles my mind when I hear people talk about this and they poo-poo the idea that this reactor could cause the problems that this guy was talking about the other day. And it just, you know, I wanted to ask you, too, since I can't see, where is Colorado on that map? We yellow, green,
oh,
red?
Oh, no, what? It's you're not on there.
Oh, good. Hey, I'm safe then. Cool. And actually, I've heard that we have gotten some radiation to it from it, though, too. But I think the mountains protect the east, you know, the those of us on the eastern side of the Rockies from anything. But, you know, seriously, a bad enough accident, which is very likely to happen more than unlikely, in Japan. I heard an estimate the other day. They are predicting another 7.5 or above earthquake, saying it's a certainty to occur within the next 10 years.
How can it not be? I mean, it's been a certainty for as long as the Japanese home islands have been above the water. It's part of the Ring of Fire, the Pacific Rim. It's going to happen. And, you know, the real dice roll is, will it happen in the next, what, 5 years?
Yep. And, you know, people don't realize that that big 7.9 earthquake has been followed by aftershocks that are 7.0 and up to
right, 7.5. And every day that passes, the containment, such as it is, for Reactor 4 is weakened.
Yep.
I mean, you can bake concrete to the point that it stops being concrete.
Yep. Well, go to any scene of a major fire that had a concrete structure and see what that concrete does. It just breaks apart. You know, the heat overcooks it, and that's it. It has no structure in
it. Right. It reverts back to its sand state.
Yep. So, I wanted to mention that after you were talking about it. And I wanted to mention, too, sent you an email on that a while ago about how the fact I feel like it's not us in the 99% that has been the problem. It's the elected officials that we have in Washington.
Well, it's almost impossible to go into this topic, Kevin, without acknowledging that the problem and the worst problems on Earth are the problems that are circular in nature, where it just seems like you can't break into the circle without having something else at your back that you have to fix before you can go forward. And this is one of those. No, the 99% are not to blame to the extent that they're not the ones sitting there voting on bills.
No.
But there's a hell of a lot of people who are to blame for the fact, for instance, and they are arguably inside the 99%, for the outcome of the 2010 elections.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was a hell of a lot of sit home who enabled that crap.
But even though that's not the right thing to do, what is the reason for that sit home? It was because we had the House, Senate, and presidency from 2009 to the election of 2010, and no big changes were done with that other than health care. I will give the president that.
Which was Herculean, and some would say that he walked into the same trap that Bill Clinton walked into, making that his signature fight. But the fact of the matter is, the health care system in this country is the signature social crisis that this country faces.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm not going to go down that road with those folks. But what I mean about a circular problem, for instance, how do you talk about putting people in office without talking about what money does to politics?
Right.
But by the same token, as was in evidence with the dude that I'm pretty sure, and Marty added into this, I'm pretty sure if I'd looked in his backpack, I would have found some Ron Paul and Marty added or Lyndon LaRouche crap.
Yep.
Who have been seduced by this very deliberate message by the right wing, okay? And let's understand all the way down to the ground, Kevin, that it is a very real ongoing campaign, this campaign to make people give up on the notion of self-government. You know, the right wing has already largely won that debate or that fight or whatever we want to call it by virtue of the fact that you get you get your everyday workaday Democrat or Republican who will say, well, you know, they're all corrupt. Well, you know, I know for a fact that they're not all corrupt because I've dealt with some of them who aren't. I mean, I can say that for an unvarnished fact.
Yep.
But the right wing promulgates that because the right wing does, and it's just this simple. The right wing does not love this country. The right wing does not love the form of government that has been established. The right wing wants to tear it down, and various factions have various reasons for wanting to do so. The Dominionists who's that other sick bunch? The Christian Reconstructionists, well, they want to tear down government so that they can set up a full-on theocracy that is based on nothing except the declarations made by people 3,000 years ago who didn't understand why it rained.
Yep.
Okay? And they want to stone people for things. The leader of the Christian Reconstructionists said so in as many words. He said, I want to bring back the death penalty in every state in the federal government. And somebody said, well, how are you going to do your executions? You know, because there's problems with electrocution and gas chambers and nooses and firing squads. And he says, well, the Bible says stoning, and last I checked, there's plenty of rocks. I mean,
yep.
He wasn't kidding. He wants to stone people to death. So that faction wants to make people give up on government so that they can take over and create a theocracy. Then there's another faction of the right wing that wants to make people give up on the idea of self-government so that they can just finally, once and for all, have done with it and move on into straight-up oligarchic plutocracy.
Yep.
So that the rich can just rule us like God wants it, well, or like the money wants them to.
Right.
But yeah, regardless of whether it's religious types or money types or straight-up fascists, what they want to do is make us give up on, even though it was flawed in its inception, it was flawed because of its times. You know, women's rights had not come along. Certainly indigenous rights had not come along as something that white people were even willing to think about, with a very few notable exceptions like Bernardo de las Casas, reporting back to the crown in Spain of the horrific abuses against the Indios in New Spain. Those people were few and far between, but those were not things that we had evolved to contemplate. How long would it be after, for instance, the ratification of the Constitution of the United States before John Stuart Mill would write on the subjection of women? You know, decades, half a century. I don't remember. My English lit class survey didn't go, but you understand. You see what I'm saying, but those concepts do evolve, and they evolved in this country within the framework of a notion of self-government, of popular sovereignty, of individual sovereignty, of people banding together to work toward the common good, and the very idea of the common good, which sits as a cornerstone to our system of government, has been demonized, has been demagogued as some sort of sick, perverse totalitarianism. And as long as that persists, I mean, just, you know, when you go about your business where you live, see how long it takes, if you're anywhere where you can hear a political conversation going on, how long it takes before someone decries government in general. You know, and I'm sorry to keep using him as a poster child, but dude there outside that meeting space, you know, talking about how you can't work with Congress. Well, who in heaven's name does he expect to work with? Is he just going to sit around and wait for it to all fall down and enjoy it? I mean, I have no patience for that. You know, there are elements within some of these movements that are constantly trying to get people who are committed to nonviolence swayed over into violence.
Right,
and it is as sure as God made little green apples. It is the quickest path to abject, unqualified, absolute failure. Because the minute we throw a rock, they're going to use bullets.
Right.
And, you know, this goes all the way back to things like the battle at Blair Mountain that we've got so many romanticized kids here in southern Western. Oh, the battle of Blair Mountain. Oh, the heroic miners. Kiss my butt. You know they. Against better advice, they took up arms and marched against people with a lot more guns. And so we're 90 years out, and people are mythologizing them as some sort of heroes, when all they did is they went out and they got their asses handed to them. And any idea of union representation or collective bargaining or freedom of association was squashed like a damn bug for another 15 years, until somebody working inside the halls of government and working with a president who actually believed that there was some dignity to being a working person, FDR, signed the National Labor Relations Act into law. Lo and behold, there's that corrupt Congress again. And you know what? The Congress was corrupt when it passed the Sherman Act, and it was corrupt when it passed the National Labor Relations Act, because corruption is inherent in that system. The way you combat that corruption is, in fact, by being jealous and zealous defenders of personal freedom and the representative nature of the government. And I'm sorry, I've just soapboxed all over you, Kevin, and I apologize.
Okay. It needs to be said. And by the way, you mentioned the Dominionist and the Christian Reconstructionist. To those who are listening, if you're kind of not believing that, just go to theocracywatch.com or rightwingwatch.com.
It's all over that every day.
Yeah, but especially Theocracy Watch gives you an introduction and a history and talks about how this has started happening many, like 30, 40 years ago, these people were starting this movement, and it's scary. extremely scary to hear some of the things they say. It sounds so innocuous until you get into the meat of it and you realize these people aren't joking. They're not just saying stuff, grousing it. They want, like you talked about the guy stoning. He probably would be one of those in favor of stoning his kid if his kid was, how does it word it in the Bible? If your kid, how does it say that? If your child is, disrespective, you should take him out back and stone him. You know, he probably would do that.
In a heartbeat.
And the sad part about that is these people want to pick and choose what they want to believe and what they don't want to believe out of that. Yeah, and that's the scary part, because that same person who says, oh yeah, we should go back to stoning, if you mention to him that the Jewish dietary laws don't allow him to eat pork or shellfish or anything like that, he'd tell you, oh, that's not for us. That went away a long time ago with Jesus.
Right, because they're going to cafeteria. It's like what Dan Savage said to that high school journalism conference. There's a lot of dumb bullshit in the Bible that we got past, and the proscription against people being gay, if in fact that is what it is, because it's not at all clear, well, that's dumb bullshit too that people said 3,000 years ago that simply does not apply. That's that simple.
Yep. And it is just, people have got, even if you agree with the Bible, what does Jesus say? Love one another. You don't, you know, I mean, they don't even want to follow the leader of their movement, because he told people to love one another, love your enemies, do good to them that persecute you, and they're talking about taking the homosexual out back and stoning him because he's homosexual.
Right, and see, you mentioned that, you got me thinking about something. I would almost be willing to do this if I thought I could stomach it. We are in a political season, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that getting upset makes my liver quiver and my gallbladder gag.
Right.
But I think it would be worth it if I could just push my, you know, screw my courage to the sticking place, as Lady Macbeth said. If I could stand it, I would like to go to church. Probably a Baptist church, because that's what I'm still recovering from. Every Sunday and every Wednesday, well, I can't do Wednesdays, I have to work. But every Sunday at least, for a few months. And see how many times I hear gay folk demonized.
Mm-hmm.
Or Barack Obama talked about being a Muslim,
mm-hmm.
or any of the other things that the hateful right wing is constantly mouth-breathing and prattling on about, versus how many sermons I heard preached on love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
I am willing, brokered in the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey that I am, I'm willing to wager $100 that I would go service after service after service before I ever heard anything about love your neighbor as yourself, but I would hear enough about the homosexuals and homosexual marriage to gag a turkey buzzard.
Yep.
I mean, you want to take the bet?
No, I agree with you. It probably would be 99-1.
If the one got in, because they're just not much on that on that lovey Jesus business. They like a Jesus with a Tech 9 and a sword and a submarine and shit. You know.
Yep. I guess I just grew up. I was lucky enough to grow up with some foundation to the biblical teaching I got, because I never have understood how people can treat someone that's homosexual. Even if you don't agree with their homosexuality, I don't understand how people can treat them as anything other than an American citizen.
Well, as a human being, if you're following that brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer's teachings.
Right, exactly. I say American citizen because it's America that seems to have the most problem with homosexuality.
Well, I mean, there are other countries, but, yeah, I think you are right in the main. Kevin, it's good to hear from you, brother, and have yourself a wonderful weekend, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Yes, sir, and you have a good trip.
I'm not there yet. Wish me that a little bit later.
Okay.
Take care now.
Take care, Bob.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Calling from the belly of the beast, Colorado Springs, that is our buddy Kevin. And we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program. 3, 2, 1. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack. What's happening, man?
Hey, you, Bob. You?
You know, me and my gallbladder, we're here.
Like I said, I've been thinking about it long and hard. When you're in Europe, tell your gallbladder to go to hell. And enjoy yourself a little bit. Just a little bit.
I don't see how I get out of Paris without a glass of wine or out of Germany without a glass of beer. I really don't.
Exactly.
I mean, I can't see myself sitting on a sidewalk cafe along the Boule Mission saying, Le mineral, s'il vous plaît. Mm-mm. No.
No. No. And when you're in France, if you don't have some of the cuisine...
Well, but you got to understand, this is, and I'm not correcting or anything, but sadly, there will be little time for enjoyment. I will, let's see, fly out of Atlanta the 20th, arrive 1:30 p.m. the 21st, deliver two addresses on the 22nd, immediately board a train for Frankfurt, and deliver another address on the 23rd, and probably home by the 25th.
Yeah, but still, what little time you have to yourself.
Oh, on the 21st, am I going to try to get checked into my hotel and run screaming for the Louvre? You're damn right I am. Yeah, I damn sure am not going to Euro Disney. I can promise you that.
No. You have to hit the Louvre. Well, I mean,
let's consider who I am. How do I not go by Le Deux Magots? How do I not go to Shakespeare and Company? That's like, I mean, you know, for the heathen that I am, that's like going to church.
Yeah.
You know, if I can't stand outside Notre Dame de Paris, you know, with one shoulder up in the air saying sanctuary, sanctuary, what's the point?
Exactly.
So,
knowing the kind of person you are, you know, I kind of expect at least that much.
I mean, the architecture's lovely. I can take a powder on the inside of the churches. Who gives a shit about Napoleon's tomb or whatever? Grant's tomb, schmoom. But no, the Louvre, yeah, I'm there. But the problem is there's so many other cool things, too.
That's true.
Yeah, the Folies Bergère, I can do without it. I've seen it on TV. But the Louvre, even for 2 hours, yeah, I just have to do my research in advance, and I don't know if I'm so burnt up about the Mona Lisa, but there is stuff in there I want to see.
Oh, I pay my respects to the lady.
Then again, you know, if it was London, you know, I'd be running for the Elgin Marbles and hollering, "Give them back!" But I'm cranky that way. But then again, if the British gave the Elgin marbles back to the Greeks, the Germans would make them sell them.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but then, and then, you know, Frankfurt, yeah. Beer. Jesus, it's beginning to sound like some sort of alcohol-induced Poe poem. The beer. You know, I want to taste the Rheinheitsgebot.
And, well, and that's the thing. You will actually taste it.
You know, a little Kartoffelpfannkuchen, a little Kirschwalder Kirschtort. Or, I'm sorry, Schwarzwalder Kirschtort. Did you make a yummy sound? No, I didn't make a yummy sound. I thought you liked the Schwarzwalder Kirschtort. Everything's a movie reference, Cossack, but at least you know that. You've been around long enough.
Like I said, you've got to tell your gallbladder to just shut up and go with it.
Well, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I tried that last Saturday night. It was not nice. Bob Lottie and I, he genially said, Bob, you got to try the clams. And I agreed. And Lordy, what a plate of wonderful, delicious clams I had. I mean, I was practically down to licking the plate, okay? And without going into any graphic details, I got back to the room, got my lounging duds on, laid back on the bed to watch a little NBA action, and all of a sudden my entire body was covered in sweat and I began to shake. And the next thing, well, I just put it this way, I spent from then till sunrise in the cool, on the cool, comfortable the tile flooring of the hotel room bathroom. You know, just sitting there, you can't really pray when you're me, but hoping against hope. You know, I don't want to wind up in the dead in the bathtub. You know, no, please, I don't want to be like Jim Morrison. No.
You can pull an Elvis.
Shut up. That's even worse. But I survived it and everything, and so I talked to the surgeon today, told him what happened. He goes, oh, yeah, that was just your gallbladder telling you it hated you as much as you hate it. So I gotta be, but let me reiterate, they were the most delicious clams I've ever eaten in my life, and under the same set of circumstances, I would very likely do it again.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that's...
Because the funny thing is, on the way out of Boston, you know, we stopped for a bite, and I had a little Caesar salad that had about a half a ton of lobster salad on top of it, and didn't bother me in the least. Of course, I'd spent the 2 days between time eating nothing but vegetarian fare with stuff like seitan and or seitan or seitan or whatever it is. It ain't meat. That and what's that other? I can't remember. Tempeh. Ate a bunch of tempeh. And I guess that quieted things down. But yeah. So. But yeah, I know what you're. I know what you're talking about. You know, how do I go to meet heaven? You know, Germany, mm-hmm. and not just die. I want that first und das first und das first und das first. Auch das first.
Exactly. I mean, you're going to have to try some of the most adverse.
Well, you know, and one of the things I love is the contribution that the confluence of cultures. Between the Turks and the Germans created that thing that they all love so well, currywurst.
Yeah.
Which is a yummy bratwurst with a spicy curry sauce on it. I've made it here, and I'll bet it's better there.
I would risk to wager.
Sauerbraten, rouladen, the pickled cabbage. Oof. And, of course, Schwarzwälder Kirschtorte.
And had
Spätzle. Oh, Spätzle. Oh. I love Spätzle. See, we're doing it again. And then France is an even bigger conundrum.
Yeah.
There's a veal dish that I would love to try and yum. See? I'm doing it. Little pearl onions and this white beurre blanc sauce and my gallbladder's aching with me just thinking about it.
If you have the time and the ability to hit a farmer's market,
yeah, that I know that will because yeah, to go to that massive meat market in central in wherever it is in Paris, Well, hell, just to go to Les Tuileries and stroll around, but there ain't gonna be a strolling time, so. But I will have checked off a box, I guess. Robert in Australia suggesting a wine tasting where you spit, perhaps. you know, manage one of those where you don't drink the wine, you taste and spit. And he says, okay, not as much fun, but it doesn't hurt the gallbladder. But then again, it's red wine. Maybe it has healing properties for the gallbladder. Yeah, yeah. See Bob rationalize.
But you feel like taking a trip on the old way back.
I'm always up for that.
Yeah. That whole thing about Romney and the hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bob, I was around back then. And there were cases, this is not a joke, there were cases of fathers killing sons over their hair. This was a really serious thing to people. And Romney now says he doesn't remember the incident. I'll bet you dollars to donuts.
You know damned well he remembers it, and you know he still chuckles about it privately, Cossack.
Correct. And maybe even if he doesn't remember it, I'm sure as crap that his victim does and has remembered it often and tenderly since that attack. And unfortunately, as I found out the hard way, my dad told me early on, he says, the way to deal with bullies, ignore them. Ignore them until you can't ignore them anymore.
Yeah, see, it does get to that point, doesn't it?
Then you grab one of them, beat the living snot out of them so badly that the message goes out, this guy will kill you. And the bullying stops. It does. Trust me. I got kicked out of school, but the guy ended up in the hospital. He never bothered me anymore. Nobody did, neither did anybody else. But I have put him in the hospital. Why? I mean, you know, is it... Is it really necessary to do this? And unfortunately, it seems that it is.
You're driven to it and driven to it and driven to it. It, well, here's our next movie reference, Shane.
Yeah. You know, you keep getting pushed.
What's that other one, The Quiet Man?
Yeah.
That applies too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we tend to forget just, you know, how violent things really were back then.
Yeah.
You know, it really seemed to a lot of us that our world was
well, and let's take, you know, the analysis of this has largely been on the immediate question of what kind of shitty human being is Willard Romney. And anybody who saw his behavior at Bain Capital can answer rather promptly, Cossack, a really shitty human being.
Correct.
But if you delve deeper into it, the apple falleth not far from the tree, so what kind of shitty parents were George and Mrs. Romney that they raised a bully like that?
Well, he was basically raised by the private schools that he attended. He wasn't home that long.
Don't you love the Don't you love the new nickname, the Cranbrook Clipper?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that mentioned in Malloy's chat room last night, and I modified it to Cranbrook Clipper, and I think that sticks.
No, I think it'll work.
Or we can keep working the alliteration side of the street and. The Cranbrook Clipper from Kolob. Pretty soon it'll be that Jack Webb Johnny Carson skit about the Copper Clapper Caper. The Cranbrook. I got to get better at it. The Cranbrook Clipper from Kolob. And I do love what David in Tennessee said. You know, Planet Cola, Planet Cola. It has a ring. It has a ring. Well, I got to roll out of here, Cossack, but it's good to hear from you, brother.
All right, Bob. Have a very good trip. Enjoy yourself while you're in Europe. It's what little time you have to yourself, use it well.
Yeah, one of the things we got to do is while I'm wandering through the Atlanta airport, we got to keep me out of Popeye's Fried Chicken.
Just saying.
Yeah, but take care, my friend.
No gizzards for you.
Later.
All right, have a nice weekend. Have a good trip.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack with us long and long and long, 10 minutes before the hour, trying to reach all the blinking lights. Hey, welcome to the program. And 3, 2. I liked it when it went to busy. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Fine, how are you doing?
Well, having a little fun with Cossack there, me and my gallbladder.
Well, don't allow your gallbladder to, well, that's easier said than done. I'm not going to.
Well, as of last Saturday night, it really is easier said than done, Jim.
Well,
trust me without the graphics.
Absolutely. So, you know, you have to be somewhat circumspect in the face of temptation, I guess. But Paris is a very tempting city, and believe you me, when you talk about certain fights, well, if you can avoid Les Invalides, Napoleon's Tomb, or Notre Dame, that's okay. But if you want to go to a Shakespeare and Company, think of Alice B. Toklas' cookbook. When you do that, think of her preface to that book when she talks about in advanced age no longer being able to enjoy the bounty of the table.
Ouch. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a very moving preface too.
No, I'm familiar with it, but I had forgotten about it. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And of course, you know, she was noted for a lot of wonderful things. It was served at the 28 Rue des Feuillus with Gertrude Stein, and you know, she went through an awful lot of things, enjoyed a lot of things in life, and being from Oakland, California, to go to Paris during the Roaring Twenties, and to meet all the people she met at Miss Stein's apartment, the painters and the writers, and it's just incredible. She lived a very good life and cooked wonderful things. And I hope you can enjoy some of these things, at least with a modicum of circumspection. And
absolutely. And, you know, the few hours I've got, milk them dry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And where is this meeting being held in, for example, in Paris?
I don't know the address. It will probably be at the headquarters of the respective financial institutions, which I would guess are probably on the outskirts of Paris, where buildings can be big.
Well, Paris has changed a lot, for example, in the past 40 years. I mean, for example, it's all the market has been moved out of the city, and if you're on the perimeters of the city, I guess you're going to fly into Charles de Gaulle Airport, right?
That looks like the plan, yeah.
Used to be called Orly.
Right.
And you can go through that series of tubes on the escalators and all that that was put on the cover of iRobot by the Parsons Project.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
I'll be damned. I never knew that, Jim.
No. It's Charles de Gaulle. It used to be Orly.
I've looked at the cover of the Alan Parsons Project iRobot a million times, and I never realized that's what that was.
Yeah.
The original series of tubes.
Right. The tubes over the escalators. And, you know, it's one of the additions and modifications they made when they revamped Orly into Charles de Gaulle.
I'm gonna have to knock the rust off of my high school French pretty damn quick, Jim.
Well, I think it would be more circumspect for you to say just we American, and most of the people there will speak English because they do take a very great pride in their language, and you can do what you will, but that's what I would do. And as far as language is concerned, referencing your earlier remarks about name-calling and stuff like that, I think people need to be a little more delicate in what they say as far as appellations and names that they refer to gay people and stuff like that. I mean, I've been on this program how many years with you?
For as long as there's been a program, Jim.
I don't think you've ever heard me use any derogatory names as far as race or ethnic groups, have you?
I don't believe I have.
Nor will you ever. I'm above that. And the terms like fags and queers and stuff like that, that's just totally inappropriate. And that's one of the reasons that when that caller comes on your phone, I just immediately cut the radio off and disengage from the program.
Well, that's one of those pajamas nightshirts the moments. I find our conversations every bit as scintillating as the conversations you and I have. The essence and the very nature of this program, Jim, is conversation.
I understand. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, though, nonetheless. And, you know, it doesn't promote cohesion.
And we must also understand that sometimes people make assumptions that may not necessarily be, shall we say, valid ones. And I will leave it. I will leave it at that.
Well, last week ago tonight, I expressed on this program my feelings concerning all that. So, you know, after that stands for historical record on your memory disk or your.
As long as the server bill gets paid.
Well, whatever. There you go. I mean, it's there for. And it'll be there in perpetuity, so we'll leave it at that. And I think the lesson is well taken. But I do hope you do have some time to go to Shakespeare and Company. Sylvia B.
Any recommendations for Frankfurt?
Frankfurt? Oh, the square. The square is beautiful in Frankfurt. They have a very beautiful public square there. And I wish you were going to Berlin. I could help you better there.
We'll keep Berlin on the list.
That's sort of a non-issue at this point, but or to Cologne or to other places. It's just amazing how well Germany has been rebuilt, or to Munich, for example.
Oh, sure. Well,
or
Muslims feel an obligation to go to Mecca. Roman Catholics feel an obligation to go to Rome. I feel an obligation to go to Oktoberfest.
Well, yeah, that'd be great. And be sure you have your surgery behind you when you do. The Oktoberfest is something else. It really is. That's a typically German time of what we would call Gemütlichkeit.
Indeed.
And there it is, and there you have it. So, all I can
I'm knocking the rust off my 1 year of high school German too.
Well, yeah, you can do that if you wish.
My accents were not terrible, Jim. So, yeah, I will not be speaking hillbilly Deutsch or hillbilly Francais.
Please don't.
And it will not. And none of the phrases will be followed with y'all.
Please don't.
Bonjour, y'all. Yeah, no, that just doesn't work.
Well, actually, you'll find this somewhat incredulous, but people from the South who speak with a Southern accent have a much easier time in mastering French than people from the northern part of the country.
Right, because we are already adept at forgetting how to pronounce R's, among other things.
Right, and of course, you know, a lot of the Southern dialect was influenced by the French and things like that. Well, listen, you got to get out of here, so do I, but all I can say to you from this point forward is bon voyage.
Merci beaucoup.
Monsieur.
Take care, Jim. Have a good weekend.
Hey, boo.
Bye now. And it is time to get out of here. Thanks for a great Friday on the front porch, everybody. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go to stoptheache.org and learn about the ongoing efforts of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency campaign. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is on the way.